What the fourth industrial revolution will lead to is a fusion of our physical, our digital, and our biological identities.
The difference of this fourth industrial revolution is it doesn't change what you are doing. It changes you. If you take a genetic editing, just as an example, it's you who are changed. Yeah. And of course, this has a big impact on your identity.
Yeah. It is important to use the COVID-19 crisis as a timely opportunity. So people assume we are just going back to the good old world, which we had, and everything will be normal again in how we are used to normal, in the old fashioned. This is, let's say, fiction. It will not happen. The cut which we have now is much too strong in order not to leave traces.
Wall Street and biotechnology companies have been very excited about this idea. And what essentially it is trying to pack the cells in the body in order to make them into drug factories.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
December 13th, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. I apologize out of the gate for if I'm wearing something that doesn't actually match. Just I wanted to wear this shirt today so you guys could see the Vagabond shirt. And of course, it's just what I had left in the office today. But I have a great show planned for you today. I mean, I've only said this a few times. Maybe three or four, if I can remember correctly. But if you're going to watch one show out of any of the shows that I've done, this is going to be the one of at least one of the top five. Let's put one of the top three. There's so many important things in this show. I mean, I just can't say it enough. I was talking about this before with somebody else. It's unbelievable. Like, I was having trouble titling this show because it's like I'm missing burying leads or just completely missing them. There's so much important stuff in this show. Please stay tuned to the end. Clip it, share it, pay attention to Star's Twitter account, where she's clipping the smaller ones and sharing those as well. There's so much that's going to come out of this show that needs to be shared. I mean, just absolutely powerful stuff in regard to the real risks of the Pfizer injection coming directly from a European document that's from Pfizer as of September 24th, telling you all the things we've been telling you right on paper. They don't have data for pregnancy. They don't have data for this. They don't have data for that. There's clear issues of things that they're discussing as vaccine-induced disease. As a serious risk, they pose this right on their documentation, but fake news, safe and effective, and all the different things they keep parroting, it's unbelievable. There's two important topics we're going to go over today that have to do with different locations outside of the United States, that is. Today, specifically in Japan, they put out some really interesting points about whether or not they're going to force people to take this injection and how that affects the vaccine passport that they do seem to have. On top of that, there's more information as well from in regard to Japanese information studies coming out showing you that the risk is in fact greatly, incredibly higher for people taking the vaccine, in particular in regard to the youth, the 20s in particular, in regard to the things with myocarditis and things we've seen. And the study shows you specifically a 7 times higher risk of death for people in this age group. And in general, a 40% greater risk for younger categories, but across the board. I mean, this is just out of control. And this is all shown with the data they give to you to research for yourself. I haven't heard this on the mainstream media. Have you heard any of this? They don't even care. Do they even care about it? Now, there's also some information in regard to Julian Assange that I want to touch on again that I found out that and question that I had, and I want to reiterate that again today and what that actually means. And of course, something that will absolutely that's actually why I use the word totalitarian in this title today. This law from Victoria, from Canada, is unbelievable. I mean, it's like they just decided to go all the way to the extreme, and it is all under the guise of COVID-19. even more than that, by the way. There's more things in the show today than you're going to believe. We're going to get to it. We're going to start off right now with a couple of important points from the beginning of this. This actually is a great thing to shout out from the Greater Reset Part 3, which I guess we're deciding whether or not I'm going to be speaking at. I'm down to it. We'll be seeing what's happening. I might just be going to Texas myself. But as he says, we are excited to announce that RFK Jr. will be speaking at the Greater Reset Part 3. And it's important to see how much a lot of the people out there are coming together. All of us. We are coming together to push back and fight against what's happening today. And this is powerful. The Greater Reset itself is something that I highly recommend you check out because of how important it is, giving you alternative, I hate even to say that, solutions, because I don't think what they're doing are solutions even remotely. They're hiding behind the idea of solutions while they're driving in their agendas, but pretending they're solutions. These are showing you that there are other solutions to the same problems that are there that don't involve you giving up your freedom and your rights and your autonomy and everything else. But here's the main site in regard to the Greater Reset. Please check it out. Important stuff. This is going to be January 26th, I believe, 26th to the 30th. Also wanted to shout out some new shirts on Whitney's new website, the Unlimited Hangout, just Unlimited Hangout. And there's some really great shirts on here. I just wanted to shout out for her, especially since she's going to be on maternity leave. This will be a way you can still support her if she's out for a while. But this one I already have, the one that's Reset with Klaus Schwab. There's one that's the Gnome Gatekeeper, the Gatekeeper Gnome, you know, Noam Chomsky. And then Absolute Control, this guy, I forget his name right now. It escapes me, but the BIS international banking guy. And it's meant to be like the State Puff Marshmallow Man. It's hilarious. This is my favorite, though. This is supposed to be Dr. Fauci, but if you are in the inside and you know what that is, I'm sure you recognize probably if you've watched some of the stuff I've talked about. You've seen Check It Out with Dr. Brulé, with James C. Riley. That's who that's supposed to be. Just a classic knock on Dr. Fauci being that same guy pretending to be a doctor. Kind of the idea, right? And this is something that is just a perfect encapsulates what Fauci really needs to be seen as in my mind. But great shirts. Check it out. Support Whitney as much as you can as well. Limited Hangout, Last American Vagabond. A lot of good things coming your way. But to start off today with a Facebook discussion, I just had to start with this today because of how insulting this is, how demeaning it is, and how obvious what this shows you, the way that they see them, or at the very least, the argument they're willing to make, which undermines the entire premise of what they're doing in order to not be held accountable. Sort of actually, quite honest, what I thought about when I saw this, it brings to mind when it was something, I think it was Tucker Carlson that was the focus, but you could probably make this about any of these people, where they essentially argued that what his arguments couldn't be taken seriously, therefore you couldn't hold him, something like that in regard to the way they argued in a court of law, where that's how I see all the mainstream media, that it's all a big show, and they all see themselves that way to a degree. People on the right don't think that about Tucker, of course, because he's all the one out there fighting for you, and he does seem to talk about some of the most important things, but I could spend all day pointing out all the times that he doesn't, and all the times that he wraps you back into the mainstream talking points, but we'll leave that for another day. Today, this is the same kind of thing. This is Facebook being held accountable, at least called out, and their argument in regard to why they can't be held liable for their slander, let's say, is because their fact checks aren't actually facts. They're protected opinion. This is not a joke. This was in documentation. This is from reclaimthenet.com. December 11th, Facebook says it's not liable for false fact checks used to censor because they're, quote, protected opinion. I mean, this is one of those things they jokingly say, you just can't make this stuff up as much as you totally could just make this up. It's just ridiculous. They're saying that their fact checks, which are supposed to be factual in order to check the facts of others, are in fact just their opinion. Therefore, you can't hold them accountable for it. Yet, guess what? They're still going to censor people. People are still going to lose their jobs. Things are still going to happen because of their opinions that they frame as fact. That's still used as fact in their world. In court filings, Facebook argued that its fact checks are not factual. They're protected opinion. And I'll show you the actual documents in a second, but here's just the little screenshot. John Stossel, a libertarian journalist and author, filed a lawsuit against Facebook, claiming the platform defamed him through a fact check label. And we all know that we've been following this, or Robert Malone's been really going after these people, or James Lyons Weiler, a lot of them, because these are experts, highly, highly regarded credential, highly credentialed experts that have every right to speak on these topics, even if they may be wrong, right? That's just the way that system works, the way that reality works. And yet Facebook has the gall to fact check them. Are we really going to pretend that Facebook hires the people with the credentials, the level of them? No, they don't. They're riding on narrative. That's why we keep seeing people get censored for things that are true, because it's just not supposed to go against the narrative. We've shown you a million examples of that. And I don't mean true that we debate they're true. Things that they've admitted are true, yet you're just still not allowed to say them verbatim online. That's how ridiculous this is. Facebook added a misleading label to this person's video. Stossel was censored on Facebook, and his work was undermined by the fact check that he alleged was defaming his character by falsely accusing him of lying, which that's a fair legal argument, especially if this is a huge part of his business. And if you think that arguing you're willfully lying about something is not defamation, that's a willful choice to not see what that is. So the point is, if you're going to defame somebody on a large scale, then they can hold you accountable. That's what this is. In the recent court filings, Facebook's attorneys, instead of facing the music, argued that the fact checks they used to say he was lying were their opinion on video and not actual fact. Libel law protects opinions from defamatory liability. So that's why. So they probably just simply said, well, we have to claim it's an opinion. Otherwise, we are going to be legally held accountable and we're going to lose because he's right. Right. And that's how this works. So they just argued that, probably hope nobody would notice this. Now, there's the documentation you can see for yourself, saved on my website in case it goes away. You can read through it, look at all in depth for yourself. It says, quote, the labels themselves are neither false nor defamatory. To the contrary, this is Facebook saying this, they constitute protected opinion. Facebook's lawyers write that in court filings. Do you not realize how ridiculous this is? As I said, well, isn't that cute? Facebook argues it is not accountable for false fact checks, because you could read into that regardless. What they're saying is false, right, whatever, any kind. Therefore, you can argue that for false, the ones that they have gotten wrong, right, that they're arguing that they're not accountable for false fact checks, because that constitutes its protected opinion. So not only is it an opinion, which means it's not a fact check, but it tells you the second point that I say right here. This is a corporation arguing it has protected speech while it violates the free speech of Americans, an inherent right outlined by the Constitution, which they hide behind to protect their censorship. I mean, really absorb the absurdity of that. We are the ones, our constitutional rights are enshrined in the Constitution, not the rights of corporations. And yet right now we're watching a corporation argue it has protected speech, and therefore they have the right to censor our protected speech. I mean, good God. That's just clown world if there's ever been clown world in a clown world. I can't believe that they had the nerve to say something like that. But we'll go back. We'll keep going on this. It says, Facebook wants the ability to allow fact checkers to accuse their users of lying and censor and ban users based on those fact checks, but not to have any liability for accusing them of lying with those fact checks. Fact check articles written by Climate Feedback, by the way, were one of the groups involved with this lawsuit, and they argued that, oh, that's not us, so we're not accountable for that, even though they use their argument and they commission them to do so. I mean, this is just rampant lawlessness in every possible way you could see this. I mean, this is just wrong in every way. Now, the reason I brought up the Climate Feedback, not only to show you that it's just another sidestep, but also to point out, oh, actually, before I do that, I did finish it off right there. Anyway, the point was, I can't believe we have a platform that is claiming that they have free speech that supersedes your free speech. I mean, that's just baffling to me. But speaking of the climate point that I just pointed out there, there's an interesting development that I wanted to share before we get to one other point that I added at the end here, which is Russia actually vetoed the UN resolution to recognize climate change as a threat to global security. And I kind of was taken aback by that. I mean, I'm regardless of different variations within the global narrative between Russia and the United States, I've very much felt that all of them are in some way lockstep in this agenda. I mean, pretty much all, pretty direly, but it's hard to see it all. Regardless, it's my opinion and anybody's opinion. Nobody out there knows for sure that's the case. But what's interesting to me is when you saw that, that's a huge step in the wrong direction for their agenda. As I said, that's very interesting, as this action seems to stand in the way of the Build Back Better Great Reset agenda, or one of its primary vehicles at the very least. And due to the fact that the UN is trying to declare what I see as a global state of emergency here. Like, that's the bigger point that kind of gets left away from that. Think about that. Remember, we know where that leads. Look at what the state of emergency that Trump initiated did to this country or every other country that did so. It became that the solution was worse than the problem. Oh, weird. It's almost like we predicted that right in the beginning. And Trump said, no, that's not going to happen. And then it literally happened. But regardless, this is the beginning. Just like we said with the passports and the climate change shift over, if they're able to declare a worldwide global threat to security, which is the same as saying a global state of emergency, because it's going to use global security, like national security, to argue the same things they're able to do. And then who's holding accountable the global community? There's nobody, right? This is off the rails. So if they're able to claim that global emergency, we are going to see this exponentially jump forward. And guess what's going to be used for that global emergency? Lockdowns, masks, everything they already used. Weird how that works perfectly, doesn't it? This is crazy. But does that mean that Russia's absolutely not involved? No, I mean, who knows? This could be part of the plan to make you think they're not whatever. The assumptions and theorizing today are, they serve purposes. But the more we dive in to how much we can prove today, these things become meaningless, at least in the context of where we are in this exact moment. Because the end of the day is we don't need to be arguing what we think might be happening. We have everything enough to prove that they're lying right now. We had that months ago. The problem is about getting other people to see it, right? So I was talking about this with somebody today. You know, I'm almost gone past the idea of trying to figure out what they might be doing next. It's like I'm almost lost interest in that. I'm aggressively focused on what we can prove in this moment. Well, we have scientific data to back up. And that's all we need because it's all on your side, guys. That's what's crazy about this. Anyway, this is an important point because I think we should keep an eye on that. If he continues to push back against that, it may mean that as Putin himself, the government, maybe they don't agree with that. Certainly something to consider. I don't think that, to be honest. My gut tells me this is more of a ploy, but nonetheless, an interesting move. Now, I wanted to do one last point to bring us over into the COVID-19 discussion. And this breaks my heart to see how lost people are. And people that, you know, were ostensibly on the side of freedom, arguing, you know, back when it was only foreign policy that was in the mix. This is breakthrough news. This is what they say. Anti-vaccine activists, their name for anybody anywhere that doesn't agree with the vaccines or the COVID vaccine specifically is the best thing since sliced bread. We're all activists, out there protesting against vaccines. It's not what's happening. We're just trying to get to the facts, and we have a right to say no, and we should always have a choice. That's our argument. Do I have opinions within that? Yes, but that's not what we're actually saying on the Daily Show and Daily Wrap-Up and the Daily Show that I do, as anybody else in the same field is. We're out here saying you should have a choice. But we're all anti-vaccine activists, and we're often people who were scientifically illiterate until yesterday, they say. And now, after reading a few online posts by fake experts, they think they're doctors. You see how stupid this is? They're first of all treating you, you know, like you're a child, like you're too dumb to know. And the point is that at the end of the day, these people are just reading things from other people that post things about what they think. Is that what we're doing, guys? Or am I reading off what some guy posted on Twitter and then theorizing about what that means, the bigger picture? No, we're reading scientific studies from the highest regarded outlets in the field. And here's my point to what, and the point is they say, watch this person who I'm not familiar with, Rob Walsh, address their claims about the vaccine with Rania Kolek. Now, I don't know what this person is essentially, I don't know what side they're taking on this, but I do know that Rania is aggressively, we're anti-vaxxers, which is very sad because she did some good work in regard to foreign policy, in my opinion. But here is what I said, except that's quite literally the opposite of what MIT found when researching the exact same topic. Remember, we've talked about this in depth, both Corbett's article. I'll actually just leave his article because don't freeze up on me here. All right, I'm just going to close that since it's freezing on me. So this is his article. The link is in there. Unfortunately, I'm noticing the link is below. Oh, no, it's right there. It's right there. So the link is in the article. You can link to go and check out MIT. Okay, it doesn't look like we're freezing. Man, it's going slow. Go look at their study itself. Now, I just finished my point. This is Mark Corbett's title, MIT, COVID Skeptics Champion Science. And this is what they found. MIT found that people that were challenging the mask mandate or challenging this information were far more invested in the scientific method. That's not my opinion. That's exactly what they found. So I said, that's quite literally the opposite of what MIT found about what you're talking about. But I said, don't let the very science you scream we should be trusting get in the way of your narrative, though. Because, you know, we don't want that. Crazy. It's very sad to watch this. The Breakthrough News platform, which has 46,000 followers, with people like, I mean, these are people that are very aware in some level and internally that they're being hypocrites by arguing that this is something you should force on people while pretending to be anti-imperialists. Because remember, it's being forced on people around the world at the behest of people like the US, the UK, France, Israel, all of it. It's already happening. Africa's the big focal point right now. But isn't that sad that they don't know this? Either they don't know, they don't care. The narrative is that we're anti-vax or conspiracy theorists. That's the narrative. Doesn't matter what else goes around that. Doesn't matter that MIT said the exact opposite. Now, going over into the manipulations around this topic and the fear that's driving it all, starting off with Disclosed TV, just in, UK raises COVID-19 alert level from level 3 to level 4. Well, that sounds scary, right? I mean, man, that's getting serious. Well, kind of seems to contradict something that I've been pointing out since May 2020. This is high consequence infectious disease, HCID, on the uk.gov.uk website. Okay, that's exactly what we're talking about, right? The UK. Okay, UK is saying this is not level 3 anymore. It's level 4. This is serious stuff we're talking about. Okay, so on this page that was updated in May 12, 2021. So in fact, a year later from what I'm about to show you. Here's what it says. Status of COVID-19. Most of you probably seen this. This is as of the most recent update. As of March 19, 2020, COVID-19 is no longer considered to be a high consequence infectious disease. Yep, that's what it says. I mean, I guess you could pretend that they just accidentally, like, oops, we left it there, except the fact that this has been updated multiple times since then. The last one was on May 12th, 2021. And if we're really going to pretend that it took it from May 2020, they deemed it no longer a high consequence infectious disease, meaning that it's not very concerning, even though they point out in this article that it can still lead to problems. Of course it can. But then an entire year goes by, May 2021, when they're screaming, we're all the most serious pandemic in the century and blah, and they're still doing that. And they just recently brought it up to level 4, and they still have it listed as a low consequence infectious disease. It just speaks to the ridiculousness of all of this. Doesn't matter. Now, what does it take to increase it from level 3 to level 4? Well, the UK weekly case rate, more than 250 per 100,000, which is pretty meaningless, especially since we're right now dealing with two different variants within, so they tell us, Delta and Omicron, which I'll even prove to you again today, including Delta, are not more dangerous. They're in fact increasingly getting less dangerous, which is what people continue to tell you that were more the Great Barrington Declaration side of things. Right, this is what things tend to do, and the vaccine continually being shammed into the process is what keeps these things problematic. Gee, I wonder why we get a flu shot every year, why it keeps coming back. Well, that's why, right? This is not how things tend to go, and we've seen this throughout history with things that do become endemic and they're no longer a problem. They can be a problem. Some people still do get sick, but that's always been there. That's called being a human being. The problem is that it's not severely problematic. The death rate's very low. And especially now, even the beginning of this, it was lower than the flu for most people. Now we're at a point where we have two things that have gotten less severe. We don't talk about that, though. They just go, but it could be more transmissible, which means things that hypothetically could be this and that and danger. That's all they do. But we're long since the point where this is actually meaningful in regard to current immediate risk. Or how about just add the PCR test into that, which is rife with false positives. So 250 cases or any case number doesn't bother me. Is the national R basically how many people it shares to? Like, well, you get sick and then you share it to other people. What they're basically saying is the national R reliably estimated to be greater than 1? I mean, really? So if you spread it to one person, that's justifiable to be more. I mean, this is I want to find out whether these have been updated. I don't know that. Is the doubling time of confirmed new infections less than 7 days? Are there more than, and it's all still cases, guys. Are there more than 30,000 estimated new infections in the UK per day? Cases, PCR test, arguments, assumptions, estimates. That's all this is, over and over and over. We are in a cycle. We're in a hamster wheel of the same propaganda that led to the same problem the point before, where we found out, well, they hyped this and hyped that and lied about the R number, lied about this. And you find all these different, like, what was the one that they lied about aggressively? That was the positive percentage. You know, like how many people they're coming and testing and then how many of them are getting sick. And they were 100% this and 90% that. And you came, it turned out that most of them were something like 3%, 5%. They blatantly lie. And that was in the mainstream media. Now, here we are back again where we're just taking them, they're citing these numbers and we're taking them at face value. How is that possible? Are COVID-19 related hospitalizations increasing at the equal to or greater than 25% over the same 7-day period? Well, by the way, that happens literally every season. We've shown you that with past articles going back to the year 2000. Every season, oh my God, we're overwhelmed. The NHS is overwhelmed. And well, here we are. And we're doing it again. And they're going to use that to argue what they want. Is COVID-19 related hospital occupancy increasing? Same point. Are COVID-19 related high dependency units or intensive care units admissions increasing? Okay, well, that could be applied to any number of things. And by the way, those last three, all of which could be driven aggressively by, I don't know, vaccine problems, vaccine side effects. Or just increased problems from the mask wearing while your immune system is suppressed because of the injection, or 1,000 other converging problems. The assumption that because hospitalizations increase, it has to be the COVID-19, that is a self-serving assumption that's not backed up by the facts. Is COVID-19 related HDU or ICU occupants increasing over the same period? Same point. Are new daily COVID-related deaths increasing by equal to or greater than 25% over the same day period? Now, again, COVID-19 related deaths, that's anybody who got the injection and then gets sick, or any variation therein. I mean, this is a manipulated number, 100%, especially since you, in the beginning, on the other side of the vaccine, you can have people that just get a PCR test and are told they're sick and then die in a car accident. And that also increases. You see how this is just wildly subjective. That's why we're now having studies that come out that say, well, obviously these things could be miscategorized. And that plays a huge factor. And nobody wants to talk about that outside of independent media. Is current direct COVID-19 absolute healthcare pressure sufficiently high to support escalation to level 4? Is current direct COVID-19 absolute healthcare pressure sufficiently high to support escalation to level 4? So that seems interesting. So is it not just based on the danger, or is it what's it saying? The pressure is sufficiently high. So if the pressure wasn't there, would it not go to level 4? I mean, does it make sense? Level 4 seems to suggest that everything before that we're just having an increased problem. But I guess if they're able to handle it, doesn't go. I mean, it just seems too subjective to me. And then we just go back to the point where it says that it's simply not a high consequence infectious disease. And it hasn't been since May 2020, according to the UK government. Now, speaking of the UK government, you know, and wondering whether they might have conflicts of interest, here's somebody pointing the same thing out in regard to the MHRA, the same group we just pointed at, and how they were just awarded almost £1 million from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Well, let's take a look at what they have to say. MHRA awarded over £980,000 for collaboration with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the WHO. Well, what are they trying to do? Well, it says we're delighted to announce a new partnership with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the WHO that aims to extensively improve the safety monitoring of medicines in low and middle income countries, LMIC. Great. So they're going to improve the monitoring of medical administration in third world countries. That doesn't seem like it interestingly ties in with today, does it? Maybe the tracking and monitoring and how they work. Is it right? This is something when you jump over into these areas like this, they can do whatever they want when no one's paying attention. Just like what happened with the injections for polio and other things in regard to India, which hurt a lot of people. And nobody was ever held accountable to that because they frame it under, well, we're just trying to do good things. We want to do right by these people. And then we hurt a lot of them. We go, well, we didn't mean to. Or they did, and that was the plan. It was an experiment. Then you just pretend in the world and the you know, when the cameras are on you, that we were trying to do good stuff, and they're kind of lying about what happened, or they misunderstand, or it wasn't the side effects, or they can't prove that it came from the vaccine. However you want to frame this, you are letting these people continue to stick their fingers in lower income countries and play with medical administrations and tracking when they've been literally responsible for some of the worst things that have happened. Look at the GMO catastrophe. And even though they're still pushing that, can anybody reflect on the fact that it has not only not improved the situation over there, it has increased food scarcity? That's exactly what those conspiracy theorists like us were saying 10 years ago or more. Well, here we are. And now we're going, oh, yeah, well, there's excuses for why, but let's keep doing it in one. And two, let those same people who failed here, 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 and here try again over there. This is the Imperial College London of vaccine administration or experimentation. I mean, this is, it's obvious that they keep failing and they keep pushing it. New medicines and vaccines, they say, for diseases such as malaria and HIV, which weirdly always seems to be a focus, even though, you know, why exactly? Why is HIV such a focus in regard to what they're doing? Now, I'm not saying it's not a problem in plenty of places in the world, but is it a problem everywhere? Couldn't you argue there's a lot of other things that are far more rampant? Well, see, there's an interesting tie to HIV with what's going on today. I think there's an obvious reason why that keeps being experimented with. But it says, and may be introduced for the first time in these countries where they are weak, where there are weak to no regulatory systems in place for effective safety monitoring. What? So they're literally going, we're going to go over to these countries and under a guise of doing this for good reasons, and we're going to, for the first time, introduce drugs, vaccines for malaria and HIV, where there's little to no regulatory systems in place to monitor those problems? Really? Gee, what does that mean? That means we won't get to find out whether this hurt and killed a lot of people because they don't have good systems in place. They're going to argue that why they're there is to simultaneously administer these drugs and build a system that can monitor them. Why don't we build the system first and then use the drugs? Yeah, because that's not how this works. Because yeah, you know, you're stepping on our game here, man. Get out of here. Right? It's obvious that if they want both the things to happen at the same time, it seems to suggest to me that they don't want the safety monitoring to see the first initiation of this. That's just my gut, my opinion. Either way, doesn't it make sense to set up a safety monitoring system to make sure it works properly before you start trying out new experimental things on people in low-income countries? Yeah, why not, though? The healthcare and regulatory systems in these settings may often lack the tools, training, and capacity to operate a robust safety monitoring system. So we're going to jump right in and give drugs and set that up at the same time, because that makes sense. Without an effective system, public health programs are at risk and patients may be affected. Should they suffer from adverse drug reactions, which are not promptly identified and treated. Now, even if you want to pretend they are coming in just to set this program up, this is the same grouping of people that are right now openly, aggressively ignoring every single thing being reported on Bayer's. But yeah, let's pretend like they're going to set a system up where they care about the side effects that their drugs are causing. Right. This is called being willfully ignorant, if you think that makes sense. Dr. Ian Hudson, chief executive officer at the MHRA, said, quote, "We are delighted to be involved in such an important global initiative. The new drugs and vaccines are being brought to the market for the first time in public health programs in settings where the safety monitoring and regulatory systems need strengthening." Right, exactly. That doesn't make sense to me. Why are you giving things to people where they can't monitor the problems? Well, I just answered my own question. The experience, the expertise we can bring to the project will help national safety monitoring senators identify risks and benefits early and take appropriate regulatory action to support global health. Do you hear what that just said? The expertise we can bring to the project where they're bringing in these drugs and building a safe and using that administration of those drugs to help build out safety monitoring. They're saying we will help national safety monitoring centers identify risks. So first of all, you're bringing things that have possible risks where you don't have a system to monitor those risks. So those are, their people will get hurt. And you're going to use that process to build that system and help that build global security or health. What's that called? That's called an experiment. That's called experimenting on these people to help build out, well, their system, but also ours. Guys, this is disgusting. This is using people in third world countries to test. That's what they've always done. That's what they're doing now. Here is Dr. Dan Hartman of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation says, when a new medicine or vaccine is being used, it is critical that potential risks are identified early and well understood. So we're going to go do that over there in those third world countries. Gross. Well, understanding that this has always been a manipulation, that there's always a bunch of things they're hiding from you and testing on other people. Keeping that in mind, Fauci's telling you that boosters are just going to be something you have to deal with. You know, the boosters from the things we just discussed that we don't know are safe, or we don't know are safe and effective, that are the rest of the show is going to show you there's 1,000 reasons why they know that they're not safe. Americans may just have to deal with it because that's what we call freedom, constitutional rights. No, that's what we call medical tyranny. You may just have to do what you're told because I say so, because we decide that's what's supposed to happen. for fill in the blank reason of emotional manipulation. It doesn't matter. They don't have the right to tell you what you have to do with your body. They just don't. And that used to be something they pretended they cared about up until it wasn't politically advantageous anymore. He says, when asked if people should expect to have the boosters yearly, he says, you can't rule that out, of course. But they've already said that's going to happen. Multiple countries have already made that clear. Let's not pretend like that's not something they're all discussing. Fauci's just playing the game, like I said earlier in the show. They want to be the ones that act like they're not rushing into this while using the other countries to force it and then gauging the response and going forward accordingly. This is going to happen, just like we keep telling you. Now, when this comes around, where you find out they admit that it will be yearly, if not every 3 to 6 months, remember I said this and remember to look back and go, oh, he said that and he wasn't guessing. He was using his estimation based on their previous actions and what we know they're trying to accomplish and estimating therein. Over and over and over and over and over, turning out to be exactly what they are doing because we're not ignoring what's right in front of us. It's not even that hard to see, guys. He says, if it becomes necessary to get yet another booster, then we'll just have to deal with it when it occurs. Who cares about your bodily autonomy? And don't forget that they promised 2 and you're back to normal. Now 3 and you're back to normal. Oh, wait, now it's 4. Remember when we made those jokes about the multiple boosters and they said, you're so stupid and crazy? Well, guess we're right again. All adults told to get booster jab by New Year to protect our freedoms, Boris Johnson says, with no hint of irony. Right. So getting the jab is protecting the freedoms that they unjustifiably take away from people. Like, how does the booster, like, this is beyond Orwellian, right? They take something from you. They then say, you have to take this thing that you don't want, or we won't give back to you what you were not allowed to take from you. Just take one of them, we'll give it back to you. Oh, excuse me, now take 2 and we'll give it back to you. Oh, take a third one and then we'll give it back to you. Now it's, well, take the 4th one or the 3rd, whatever step you're on, and taking that shot will protect the freedoms I'm holding in my hand that I haven't given back to you yet. It'll protect those. Now you see when I explain it like that, how that seems ridiculous? Because it doesn't make sense. How is the booster jab protecting freedoms that you haven't even given back to people? And how is it protecting freedoms if they're... If you see what I mean? Like, these are things that are inherent. And even if you did pretend that the jab was supposed to, was somehow taking away a problem, the freedoms were removed by an authoritarian government. They know this. The economy was destroyed by a government, not by a virus. Viruses don't have the ability to destroy economies. Actions do. Now, yeah, you could find a situation where a virus drives actions just because it's so severe that people just respond that then would destroy an economy. But it's not what we had. Very obviously, we had aggressive lockdowns, restrictions, manipulations, lies, statistical manipulation. They destroyed everything to drive in an agenda. Even if they believed it was a bad thing, they still took action that destroyed the economy. Look at Sweden. That's all you got to say. They can't stand that because there is no argument for that. Well, the only thing that people that don't believe us think is that we don't understand what's happening in Sweden because we're conspiracy theorists. Then they carry on to not look at anything from Sweden and act like they know. Sort of like that original argument, except in reverse, right? As we look at all the science, they tell us we're not scientific. But Pfizer's also just admitted, or rather the data itself has shown you, because they don't want to admit, Pfizer's shot has a 23% efficacy against Omicron. Now, you have to understand, this is the same shot. Doesn't matter when you take the first one, the second one, or the third one. It's the same shot. So, if it's 23% effective, it doesn't work. And on top of that, it's not even legally allowed to have emergency authorization if it's 23% effective. Yet, it currently does in multiple locations. Wrap that around your mind, or wrap your brain around that. They're breaking the law in a million different ways. Now, one thing I've actually stopped on following up on is the re-administration of that emergency authorization. They're violating rules left and right. And there's so much going on that I ended up not following up on that. But there's times when they let days lapse, where there was days between their reinitiation of the emergency authorization, which we shouldn't be allowed to do because we're not in an emergency by any stretch of the imagination, or the fact that there's a bunch of factors that make them not allowed to do that right now because of the things they're using it for. But there are days in between these where they're lapsing, where there is not actually an emergency authorization because they failed to get it done by a certain time. Therefore, they're breaking the law while they're using those things. But none of this matters. But don't forget that main point. If it's below 50% efficacy, you can look it up right now in their documentation. That's not legally allowed to be emergency authorized. Now, Pfizer's from Bloomberg, in case, you know, those that want to make sure that mainstream makes you feel comfortable. Here it is on Zero Hedge. Pfizer jab is only 23% effective against Omicron, South African study finds. Now, again, it's only the same shot. Their argument that it's somehow going to be something different for you on the third time around, especially when you took two shots back in 2020, and now suddenly you're going to take one booster 8 months later and you're going to pretend like that's going to change everything. It's just stupid. The science is not there. So if it's only 23% effective, you're going to take something that's, again, not going to be effective. But it says a few days ago, researchers in South Africa shared data from a preliminary study, which we already talked about, showing that the Pfizer vaccine is less effective at blocking the Omicron variant than earlier variants like Beta and Delta. Now the team is telling us exactly how much less effective it is. The team found that a two-shot course of Pfizer's vaccine has just 22.5% efficacy against symptomatic infection with the Omicron variant. Joe Biden is talking about the Omicron takeover as if it were already a certainty. This is still the point. Regardless of whether it's showing you we're not in danger, they are just continuing to act like this is a foregone conclusion. And the joke I made the other day is, it's interesting, isn't it, that the one argument is, well, it's super dangerous and more deadly. Therefore, it's going to overtake everything, and it's all serious, and we got to lock down and take all these actions, right? Then you've got somebody on the other side of that saying, well, no, it's actually far less deadly, and for the same, and it's equally that dangerous, and we have to do all this in lockdown because it's less dangerous. So if it's less dangerous, we're all going to die. If it's more dangerous, we're all going to die. How does that make sense? Their argument when it's less dangerous is simply that it's going to continue to spread and it's going to cause more variants, and all it's all hypothetical. They're guessing. The point is, who cares what we're saying next? It's going to lead to more lockdowns. It's going to lead to more control. It's going to lead to the Great Reset. That's the point. CEOs of Moderna and Pfizer, who have been out sharing fear, uncertainty, and doubt, otherwise known as FUD, about Omicron with the news media on almost nonstop rotation. Right. So you're bringing on people who have a financial interest in hyping Omicron. Because remember, they made billions of dollars, almost $10 billion in a matter of weeks or days, just with the hype of Omicron maybe being a risk. So, gee, I wonder why they've been making the rounds and fear-mongering about something that we know is not more dangerous. I've been saying that since then, because we did know that, and we know it now. Based on all the data in front of us, they just continue to act like they don't know, because that's self-serving. So why are they making nonstop circulation? And why would you bring in two people with financial interest in selling that fear? Because it's all the same agenda. They say their companies can have a new batch of vaccines available in 90 to 100 days. Still, they're pushing this. And as Zero Hedge points out, which I've already said, it's almost as if they've been waiting for the opportunity. And if you look back at their comments, it's clear that they have. Probably already working on an injection that really had nothing to do with Omicron or anything else. Still, in the U.S., the CDC has confirmed that only one of 43 patients infected with the variant has been hospitalized. Zero have died. But even the hospitalization, we have to realize it's very likely that it's not even Omicron. But even then, 143, it just shows you that none of this is more dangerous right now, guys. It is absolutely falling off a cliff. And all that's happening are people being hurt by these injections. And we're going to make that abundantly clear today. Now, finishing off the booster side of this point, this is already shifting. I mean, this is rapidly happening. We went from 2 to maybe 3, but that's kind of fake news, to now 3 absolutely because Omicron. And now, in a matter like a week, less than a week later, here's the next station. It's saying 3 shots Pfizer COVID vax 4 times less effective against Omicron than Delta. The 3 shot boosters. This is December 11th, or actually updated December 13th. Oh, I think I had something highlighted in here, but I don't remember. The neutralizing ability of even 3 shots of the Pfizer vaccine is 4 times less against the Omicron than the Delta variant. So if we're going to pretend that Delta is what Fauci's keep screaming we're all in danger from, and that's the real risk, even though it's clearly not more dangerous, and again, I'll prove that as we go through today, it's 4 times less than Delta. So therefore, there's no indication that this is better or more effective or whatever they keep trying to sell you the boosters as. It's not true. The team looked at the ability of serums of 40 vaccinated healthcare workers to neutralize Omicron, 20 who received the booster shot within the last month, and 20 who had only received 2 shots, and the last one 5 or 6 months ago. I had some stuff highlighted, but I don't want to try to find it. The point is simply to see that they're already pushing the 3-shot regimen for Omicron. Now they're coming out to say that, oh, well, 3 shots is not really working. So therefore, we're probably going to need 4. And this is what I already told you. Pfizer's CEO already rolled this out. He already floated this idea right in the beginning. And that's what I was laughing about. On the same day, I think it was the CEO and the CEO and somebody else involved, they came out at the same day. In one outlet, they said 3 shots neutralizes Omicron. Remember that? I made a big deal about that because neutralize means makes it harmless. So they lied to you. They blatantly lied because nowhere is that seeing becoming real. It's not being shown to be real. Then on the other channel, on the same day, mind you, they came out and said, we're probably going to need 4. So he said, we're probably going to need 4 to fight the thing that his counterpart just said live on TV that we have, it's neutralized. Do you realize how obviously dishonest that is? It's not neutralized if you know you're going to need 4 to fight it. They're lying to you. It's pushing not only the administrations, but the money that they're making off of this. Lots of money. And that's not, in my opinion, the largest point. 4 shots likely needed to fight Omicron. Pfizer says, as Fauci, CDC, I new definition of fully vaccinated that we've been 8 months ahead on. But it says, Pfizer chairman and CEO, that's what it was. So, no, that wasn't it because he's chairman and CEO. There was somebody else. I'm blanking on his title. Anyway, Albert Bourla, who was the one that said this in regard to needing a 4th one, this is the same, they're referencing the same point we made in a few shows ago, says we may need a 4th dose of this COVID vaccine sooner than expected after preliminary research show the Omicron variant can undermine antibody protection in people with only 2 doses. 3 doses against Omicron are almost equivalent to 2 doses. Almost. So it's not. Right? So now you're taking 3 doses to reach a less than equivalency of the 2 doses you took before. Why would anybody do that? That's direct statement from the Pfizer CEO. 3 doses against Omicron are almost equivalent to 2 doses. Bourla said in the interview, if we need a new vaccine, we'll be able to have a good one. He says this, if we need a new vaccine, we will be able to have a very good one. What a meaningless statement. You mean a very good one, like the one that's not happening right now? Yet this one took long. You're going to roll this out in a matter of weeks and it's somehow going to be a very good one in contrast to the one that's not working right now? Hardly. This is just him saying that because that works for his business. Bourla said the preliminary study, at the very least, you can't know that. Bourla said the preliminary study was based on a synthetic, lab-created copy of the variant. What? And more data is needed from tests using the actual virus. Real-world results will be more accurate and are expected in the next 2 weeks. Let me ask you something. They made a preliminary study using a synthetic lab-created copy of the variant. That means at some level, at some location in the U.S., they're already making Omicron variants. I mean, guys, that's not necessarily gain of function, but this is the same kind of dangerous research that they're doing all over the place. It potentially led to right where we are. Ask yourself how they got the info. How are they making it? Well, because they got genetic sequences. Do we know that's what this actually is? Has it even been isolated in this regard? Well, none. We're so far past these conversations. We are pumping stuff out in a lab, making synthetic versions of it, then making injections to base that on. Do you realize they're working on making an injection right now using synthetic lab-created variants of Omicron? That's why they're rushing this out in weeks. Now, if you believe that this is them just doing what they think is right, you have to ask yourself whether they might just make many mistakes like they already have many times, which could hurt a lot of people. But if you're paying attention and you realize there's a lot more going on here, we should be asking what the hell is going on. We are jumping from stone to stone before we even establish the stone we were just standing on is even there. I mean, it's unbelievable. But the overarching point, booster after booster after booster after booster. Finally, Canadian province stops giving boosters to elders who have had COVID in the past due to severe life-threatening side effects. Now, we're going to go to Japan next after this. I wanted to keep this next to the Canadian part of the story today, but I felt it was more important to discuss this with the booster. But remember, we have a huge conversation coming, so don't forget this in regard to Canada. Canadian province stops giving boosters to elders who have had COVID in the past due to severe life-threatening side effects. Now, there's a topic in this that is, or a point, a sentence that is just going to make you laugh out loud. This is Westphalian Times. I'm not familiar. I think they, at the very least, maybe they are, at the very least, they perceive themselves as like sort of mainstream. Maybe they are. I've just never even heard them before. But here's what they say. This is December 11th. The Quebec government had to stop giving boosters to elders who had received two doses of the COVID vaccine and previously had COVID due to severe life-threatening side effects. They had to stop giving boosters to old people when they've had previously infection, when they've had a previous infection. No shocker. I almost cussed right there. Come on. You know what this is. This is exactly what we've continued to show you. Actually, I might as well bring that study up since I haven't done it in a minute. This is what we've continued to show you. That if you have had previously, if you've previously been infected. Actually, no, this isn't even the right one. Oh, shoot, I'm going to forget what that other one is now. This one is actually, this one is mildly associated. One quick look and I'll see if I can't find it, I'll go past it. Let's see. Oh, here it is. Perfect. Yes, perfect. Okay, this is important. And then I'll include this one too since I brought it up. Okay, this is Journal of Infection. September 1st. This is one of, you know, if not the one of the leading scientific publications in this regard. Previous COVID-19 infection is associated with increased adverse events following Pfizer specifically. Of course, the media ignored this because, you know, trusting the science means ignore anything that doesn't go along with your narrative. And this is what they're finding now, today. We've been screaming about this from then. They've stopped giving boosters to elderly people who have previously had an infection, because it's increasing dramatically their life-threatening side effects. Shocker. The province's immunization committee initially recommended that elders who had COVID in the past and who also received both doses of a COVID vaccine be given a booster shot, right? Because they don't care about the data. They booster good, vaccine good. So give it to everybody. There's no possible negative effects because safe and effective. Whether they knew that was not true or just got blinded by the propaganda, that's why they pushed it out. The same reason they push it out for pregnant people. Or women, pregnant women, because that's only ones that get pregnant, or push it out for immunocompromised people, right? We've seen this a lot. And we're going to get into this, in fact, not exactly next, but the next Japan discussion, where they get into a study that very, very clearly shows you, or actually, no, I take that back. It's not the Japan discussion. It's this, which we'll get to in a minute, which is a Comirnaty document from September 24th, where they go over this stuff. And again, reiterate what I've been telling you from the beginning. That they don't have data to back up the safety of this stuff. In particular, people that are frail. That's one of the things they point out. So they're forcing this on people in many cases, at the very least suggesting they should and there's no negative side effects, while they know as a matter of fact that there are severe possible side effects. It says, however, elders in that category reacted very poorly to the booster. Many patients developed a fever after receiving their third dose. It says, and there's other stuff, lost appetite, physically ill, tired, lethargic. Then it gets into the more severe stuff. It says in more severe cases, the booster dose caused the patient difficulties in breathing and lowering oxygen levels. Now, first of all, these things itself could be deadly for people in a very severe situation. But it says some elders also become delirious after receiving the injection. While it may read like a conspiracy theory, this is the part I know you're going to like. First of all, hold on, before I even go past that, how in the world does that read like a conspiracy theory? So we're giving injections to old people. They have side effects that we can see. So we recommend stop giving them those injections because we're watching them get hurt. Now, I know this sounds like a conspiracy theory. Do you see how broken things are right now? Like, this guy is so afraid of being called a conspiracy theorist. And even while he's verifiably simply pointing to facts, exactly like we do every day, he knows what's going to happen. He's going to get eaten alive because that suggests that these are hurting people. Doesn't suggest, it proves that they are. And this is my point. You can't do that today. You're not allowed to prove this stuff because then you're a conspiracy theorist. Does that make sense? No. But the reality is, not only is it backed up by scientific research, which I just showed you, that and this, but that he's observing this, that the hospitals are observing this, the nursing homes are watching this. And that's why they made the choice to pull it back. So let me read that again. I'll read the whole sentence. Well, it may read like a conspiracy theory. The story was reported by Leduvier I think that's probably right, a major and credible left-wing news outlet. Okay, great. So you see the difference? It's not conspiracy theory because it was reported by a mainstream outlet, but specifically a left-wing one. However you want to take that. The point is that it's not fake news when it's reported by somebody that we think we can trust. That's childishly ignorant. That's like, you know, the former Cuomo out there saying, don't read WikiLeaks. You have to listen to what we tell you it says. Like, that's just, this is complete gatekeeping. They want you to trust the mainstream by virtue of being mainstream. That's it. It just blows me away. Now it goes on and says, when asked if the booster dose caused the death of elders who had previously had COVID-19, the doctor refused to give a clear answer. Quote, it's a really tricky question. When a senior is in a nursing home dies, you're going to love this too. How do you say it was the vaccine or not the vaccine that caused the death? Well, gee, doesn't that sound like a question we were all screaming back when they were dumping every COVID death in nursing homes on the COVID-19 tally? Oh, God, that's of course, for sure, for your safety. But this other side of the conversation, which is the exact same thing, well, we can't just guess. That wouldn't be fair. That wouldn't be safe. How do these people not stand back and go, well, that's pretty stupid because we just said that was the thing to do moments ago for COVID-19. For those who don't know what I'm talking about, remember in the beginning of this, nursing homes and otherwise, it was basically anybody. If you die after a PCR test, whether you're already on your deathbed or not, that's a COVID-19 death. And they openly told you that. Whether they say it's for safety or whatever else their logic is, their reason. So this doctor's doing the same thing in regard to the vaccine. So they get the vaccine and then they die. That should be the same logic. But no, how do you know for sure? So what happens here is they don't know for sure. Therefore, it goes down as nothing. That's the entire illusion right there to a large degree. But it says the side effects were so severe that the establishments under Zhang's supervision, the doctor, had to stop giving the boosters to vaccinated elders who had COVID-19 within 48 hours. They just stopped without any guidance because these people were being hurt. The province's immunization committee changed their guidance and do not recommend a booster dose now for vaccinated elders who had previously been infected. Well, there you go. Isn't it amazing how this stuff is being forced out? And they'll probably come to some irrational conclusion about why this always made sense, even though we're still censored for saying verbatim what that just admitted. It's insulting. But we knew this was always going to happen. But I know this sounds like a conspiracy theory, but facts. So stupid. But the other one that I didn't reference is this one, which basically says, in addition to if you've already had infection and then you get a vaccination, that it's pretty much going to hurt you. This one is showing you that if you get an injection that's based on the original strain, which all of these are, and then you come up against the Delta variant, which Fauci's still telling you is the vast majority, then you have a chance to hurt yourself, antibody-dependent enhancement, which we're going to go through today and show you another example, more so than this one, that's what's happening, that they know that's what's happening, that your body is hurting itself. And they discussed this in that document I showed you, that you're creating the situation is driving your body to cause these problems. And they even admit that it's circulating your bloodstream and all these different things that they've moments ago said were so stupid, fake news, conspiracy theory. They just know that the people that they're aiming this at, the fringe minority that they make up as the majority, you know, the two-party illusionists on the other side, they're just aggressively lost. As long as they get them to say the right thing. That's all it really comes down to. Now, going over to the Japan topic here. Starting off with the important part of what they just recently said. Now, by the way, I reached out to James Corbett because of where he lives and asked him if he wanted to connect possibly after Christmas and see if we wanted to talk about this. Because I think he's about to go on a Christmas family stuff and I wanted to connect with him afterward and really dive into this with him. Because, I mean, as you guys know, I mean, there's pretty much nobody I respect more than James Corbett at the moment. And he is in this location, and so I want his take on what this may actually be like, because it's really hard to get that picture from somewhere else, especially about somewhere like Japan. But here's what it says, and this is the first part of this is what Japan just said. Then we're going to get into what's actually happening, and then we're going to get into what a study from Japan reveals, and that just blows all of this out of the water. This is Aaron Kiriti, MD, professor of psychiatry at UC Irvine. Japan's Ministry of Health is taking a sensible, ethical approach to COVID vaccines. They recently labeled the vaccines with a warning about myocarditis and other risks, which everybody should have done that a long time ago. It's undeniable. They all know that. They've even admitted that out of, you know, quietly over here. And yet people still don't know the real risks of this. It's alarming how serious this is. They are reaffirmed. They reaffirmed their commitment to adverse event reporting to document potential side effects. Now, whether any of that comes to pass is up for you to decide. I doubt we'll get a full picture of the side effects, but here's the real point, what they stated. Japan's Ministry of Health states, and I'll show you this on the other, on the documents. Although we encourage all citizens to receive the COVID injection, it is not compulsory or I'm reading a quote, so I shouldn't change it. Although we encourage all citizens to receive the COVID-19 vaccination, it is not compulsory or mandatory. Vaccination will be given only with the consent of the person to be vaccinated after the information period. It says, please get vaccinated of your own decision. Understanding both the effectiveness in preventing infectious diseases and the risk of side effects. It's weird how they don't even say that, like in that context in the mainstream today, in the US anyway. No vaccination will be given without consent. It's good to see that. I don't know if they mean it or it's true, but it goes on to say, please do not force anyone in your workplace. That's the important part to me, or those who are around you to be vaccinated. And do not discriminate against those who have not been vaccinated. You will not see that stated by the US government right now, because that's all they're doing under a guise of keeping you safe. They also link to a human rights advice, including instructions for handling any complaints if individuals face vaccine discrimination at work. So good for them. I mean, it feels like, you know, I definitely think Japan is still invested in the larger agenda, but this sort of feels like a way to keep their people happy. Like, because my point is always the same. If they shift into, well, you could put natural immunity or a test or whatever, as long as you use the passport that they're still using. It's the same end goal, in my opinion. Still leads us into the infrastructure for the vaccine passports or climate change passports or whatever passports. And as we get to the end of the show today, you will see that this is an obvious effort. I have another follow-up point to the social credit discussion we just had in the last show, which is obviously happening. Israel's trying to do it. China's already doing it. It's happening all over the place. It's already happening in this country as well. We are being monitored and gauged based on our actions and given scores. It's been happening a long time in this country. They're just not showing you that score. It's been shown from many times in the past. But that's where this is all going. This is the future. Before we get to that, here is the Japanese government post, where I'll just make sure you see that that's exactly what they said. Vaccinations cause, and I just thought this was interesting. They just writing, vaccinations may cause health problems, illness, or disability. Which is, by the way, always the case. They always can. And even some of them in the U.S. maybe even admit that in the right context. But it's just funny how they don't like to make that clear. These things can hurt you. They absolutely can. Whether it's rare or not, the point is that if you have the possibility to be hurt, you should have choice. End of story. But it says, well, we just read you. We encourage all citizens to receive the vaccination, but it's not compulsory or mandatory. Vaccination will be given with the consent and so on. We just read to you. Important point, don't force anybody at your workplaces and do not discriminate, which is international law, by the way. But what's interesting, by the way, is it shows this slideshow and it says how to deal with side effects after COVID vaccination. But when you click on it, it takes you to this page where it says not found, which I find interesting. But to my knowledge, I don't remember that page being very important. It didn't seem like it even talked about any of the stuff they're discussing right now. But nonetheless, interesting. Maybe there's something changed. Maybe they don't want you seeing this. I don't know. That's weird how often that seems to happen today. And I have another point about that as we go forward about other places that are hiding things from you. But here is the actual, it's on Metropolis, English magazine, Japan's number one English magazine. COVID-19 in Japan, important updates and resources. This is December 8th. I just wanted to simply show you that there are vaccine passports in Japan to a degree. At the very least, internationally. So it makes me ask the question. That's why I wanted to talk to James about this. What does this exactly mean? If they're not going to force anybody going forward, they're not going to coerce anybody, so they say, at work. Doesn't mean they're not going to, I mean, I shouldn't say that. Coerce, yes, they're not going to force, they're not going to, what's the terms they used? It was clearer on this. It says, no, it's not compulsory or mandatory, right? So we're not going to literally force it in your arm, and we're not going to make you do it mandatory style. But obviously, they're going to coercively push people to do it with propaganda and passports. Like, well, you can't go to this concert if you don't do it. That's still coercive, right? So that's my point here is they're saying this, which is good, but it's still clearly happening. It says, well, this I found very interesting. Well, let me read this first, actually. The roughly 18,000 Tokyo bars and eateries which are yet to receive the certification, which is like a COVID certification that means they're complying with certain things. They're still being asked to stop serving alcohol by 9 p.m., which is just ridiculous. It means no, there's no logic to that. And all restaurants are asked to limit customers to 4 people per table unless they can prove proof of vaccination. So clearly they're still doing this. There's still these weird restrictions, but they're not forcing you, but this is still driving people to do it, right? So that's an important nuance there. Now here it is. Here's an article from November 16th, just basically showing you that they're still doing passports internationally, right? This is an article basically talks about other countries, and it shows you all the countries where you need them, which is quite a, look at this, it's a lot. Look at all this. These are all the countries where right now you need a passport to enter. 68 countries and regions have agreed to relax entry measures for vaccine passport holders. So if you've got the passport, then you quarantine for less time or whatever it is. It's ridiculous. So that's what they have, international. But they also have this on September 7th that talks about Japan eyes use of vaccine passports for commercial activities. So again, I'm just trying to show you that there is definitely structure to this inside of Japan. So it makes me again ask, what is this and what does it mean? Is this just a way to quiet down people, to make them think they're not forcing it? Is this a sidestep of what they're still doing? Certainly possible. But nonetheless, it's still good to see them say don't force it on people, but it's still coercively happening. And I still think that passport is the end goal, but that's still great to see. But now continuing on Japan, there's a very important study that just came out. This is, and I have the actual study itself we can go through and look at, but this is basically, where is the, oh, I have it, hold on. Screenshot it so we can look at it. Here is the top of this. So MedCheck, what this says here, so we can see it, it's a translation, translated from editorial in MedCheck in Japanese. So this is essentially like a translation of this for into English. And it has multiple topics on this. And this is as of July 2021. But it's multiple topics, as you'll see. Now it says, Japanese experts warn vaccines pose a 7 times higher risk of death for young people than COVID-19. December 13th. A Japanese medical bulletin warns that COVID vaccines pose at least 7 times the risk of death for people in their 20s than the virus itself. Certainly a study. Could it be wrong? Of course. Always, anybody who's honest can argue that scientific studies don't automatically mean it's absolute, despite how the mainstream frames the science that they like. But this is important because this is a study that's done in a sound way, as far as I can tell, that very clearly supports a lot of other findings. Now, going over to the study itself, starting with the top here, I just want to show you the breakdown. So there's an editorial. There's discussion of a new product, which we're going to actually discuss next because of what I found in here that I wasn't expecting to find. This is basically a study. Excuse me. Something caught in my throat there. Basically a study of what's called I looked it up earlier. Baricitinib. Something for arthritis specifically, but it's something that's been used in the treatment of COVID-19 because of its anti-inflammatory properties, which tells you a lot. But they studied that, and something else came out of that study that you find very, very relevant in regard to remdesivir. I'm very glad I found, actually. And it's actually something that my assistant found it or was sent to her, but she's the one that put this in front of me, and I'm very glad she did because this is a really important one. But then going on to adverse reactions, this is the bigger part of this. Here, this is just the sum up of what they found. Strong association with cardiovascular death for vaccines, COVID vaccines. Causal link between vaccination and subsequent death. Mortality risk of vaccination is 7 times higher in the 20s, and 3 teens died, causal link is suspected. Now that's just specific ones they sought out and researched. We're going to leave that third part of it out just because I find investigating individual cases are easily dismissed by people who don't want to see it. Nonetheless, look at it. It's very important. But showing you the larger picture of the 7 times higher risk in these age groups is alarming. Here's the first part. Strong association with cardiovascular death. And we've all seen this. I actually have a small part at the end of the show today in regard to the collapsing athlete part again, just because there's a follow-up that you'll think this is unnerving. But we all see this happening. Obviously, stroke and heart attack and myocarditis and all of these are shown to be clear connections to what we're talking about today. So when we see this, you can't just dismiss something like this, especially when it's tied in with other research that's been peer-reviewed. And it says, again, please read this entirely, but the points that stand out to me. Of 31 deaths among vaccinated medical workers, 84% died from cardiovascular diseases, such as stroke, myocardial infarction, venous thrombosis, pulmonary embolism, all of which we've seen tied to the injection, and heart failure. And 22% died in the general population. So 84% seems relevant. Now, the MOR, which is the mortality odds ratio, which it goes over in the study itself, the breakdown of the larger picture of why this is important, but it basically shows you the relevance. Now, it says the MOR of hemorrhagic stroke and the vaccine in, thrombosis were extremely high, meaning it's like this is their connection to the injection. Now, it says of the reported vaccinated elderly death cases, 69% died from cardiovascular causes. Now, the elderly conversation in this is important, right? We just talked about this discussion about what those are doing to them. I keep pointing out how the most at risk are the ones being most harmed by these, which makes zero sense, unless that's the point. But it also it says of the reported vaccinated elderly, 69% died of cardiovascular issues, causes, while 26% died of general population. And then it says the mortality odds ratio of hemorrhagic stroke were also very high. These suggest that COVID-19 vaccination is closely associated with the risk of death from cardiovascular causes, especially hemorrhagic stroke and VTPE. Now, the point too is that if you've already had problems with your heart or you already have cardiovascular issues, their argument they try to make is that that's just what happened and you died from that. But there's plenty of peer-reviewed research and otherwise that clearly shows you that that simply just dramatically increases that risk that you've already had. That's why only 6% of the total deaths, at least when they made that report, were people that died from COVID alone. 94% died with something like three or more comorbidities. That's why, because you're giving them these problems. Or excuse me, this in regard to COVID-19. But nonetheless, it's the same concept when you understand why this is happening, at least in my opinion, the spike protein and how this is the same. It's the same idea. But just to be clear, what I was just discussing was the original time when people were getting COVID-19, so we're told. And the only ones that were dying were people that had multiple problems. But same conversation with the vaccine. They know, they've clearly shown that the vaccine increases these risks if you have them or the problems that that then leads to. Now, going to the next one. Oh, come on. Okay, I think I did skip that. I was making sure I didn't skip a page here. Now, just to show you what it says right off the beginning here, these results support the increased risk of death from hemorrhagic stroke among vaccinated people. Just we're not mincing words here. It's exactly what the study is finding. Now, going forward to adverse reactions on the topic of the causal link between vaccination and subsequent death, which is what they're most ignoring. The people, you know, that a month later, someone just dies and nobody knows why. Or they have a heart attack in the middle of a playing field and all they put down is sudden cardiac death and they never explain what happened. These matter, especially when it's dramatically more than we're seeing in general. And it's dramatically more than you expect in the situation of the athletes. 1.46 per 100,000 per year. Way past that right now. Causality cannot be denied, it says. That's the headline. It says the Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare announced that among 919 death case reports by July 30th, remember, this is all Japan, causality with vaccination were denied in only 3 cases. And for the remaining 916 cases, the causality could not be evaluated due to a lack of information or other reasons. So right out of the gate, you should understand that that's something that's used to dismiss all of those 916 cases as we don't know for sure, which then eventually becomes nothing, even though they don't have anything to be able to dismiss that it could have happened. That's the same thing we're talking about with Bayer's. They just don't look into it, as we've actually proven more times than I can count. MHLW itself stated in a Q&A regarding the classification of adverse events that cases of unknown causality, like all of those 916 cases, should be classified as, quote, causality cannot be denied. Isn't that interestingly different than what we get told? Proportion of death from vascular diseases, including hemorrhagic stroke after COVID-19 vaccination, is disproportionately higher compared with the general population. That's their favorite argument. Disproportionately higher. So now we've got myocarditis, which is dramatically higher than the average situation, so it increases your risk, and we have a disproportionately higher incidence of hemorrhagic stroke compared to the general population. Remember, if this was on the other side of the argument, it would mean everything, but now they just ignore it. Frequency should not change if there is no causality. It says, if there is no causal relationship between COVID-19 vaccination and subsequently reported death, change in the number of reported deaths should not depend on the number of days after vaccination until death. What it does, though, that's the point. These are all just small points, clearly showing you that there is an obvious, at the very least, more than enough reason to suspect this is exactly what's happening. The fact that the number of days from inoculation to death is concentrated in a short period of time and that it is similar to the incubation period of COVID-19 strongly suggests causality between vaccination and death. These are all individual points that lead in the same direction. Now, it says in Norway, one in 1,300 people aged 75 and over who received vaccination has died, and the relationship with the vaccine has been suspected. That's crazy. In Norway, one in 1,300 in that age group, the most at risk, have died after vaccination. Can you imagine this? And this is the kind of stuff that's being overtly ignored. All the source links, as you can see, there's the five for you right there. Look into it for yourself. Unreal. Going forward. Oh, actually, I forgot it continues after this. It says, is that the right one? Gosh, I feel like I messed this up. Let me see. Dang it. I think this thing's freezing on me. Well. All right, guys, one second. It's just really important to me that I don't miss a point right here. I feel like there's some, I want to make sure I don't miss something. Hey, there you go. Now it starts working or not. What is going on here? Okay, whatever. This thing's clearly freezing up on me. I don't know what's happening. I'm just going to keep going forward. The pages are moving, but it wasn't moving. So the point was here. That's what. That was totally my mistake. I'm an idiot. Okay, going forward. mRNA vaccination. It starts down here. I thought it was missing the top part of it. Biologically plausible. Days to deaths are similar to the incubation period. This is important. This is why I didn't want to miss this. The mRNA vaccine is encapsulated in lipid nanoparticles. You all know that because you watch this show. The average person has no idea because they're told it's a normal thing like all the other vaccines they've ever heard of. They're lying. Or they don't know that. It says after injection through lymphatic vessels, it enters the bloodstream. What? That's the opposite of what we're told from the mainstream media, and is taken up by immune cells, macrophages, where spike protein is made and is released into the bloodstream. Right? Just casually stating exactly what they've said is not true for the entire time. Lipid nanoparticles, but you've known this because you watch this show. Lipid nanoparticles containing mRNA may be taken into some endothelial cells by perhaps endocytosis, in which spike proteins may be made and released into the bloodstream. Oh, weird. Which is exactly what's happening and causing blood clots and causing all this. We've already seen all the research that suggests that. All they say is, well, that doesn't happen. Doesn't go in the bloodstream. Over. Game over. Why? Because Pfizer said so. It's verifiably that it does. Plenty of other science has shown that. Release and circulating spike proteins in bloodstream are taken up into vascular endothelial cells from the site where the receptor H2 is abundant on the inner surface of blood vessels. Similar to infection, endothelial cells, which are as if infected by spike protein and or lipid nanoparticles containing mRNA, are recognized as foreign bodies by the host immune system and are attacked and eliminated. Right. So the idea is this is what they want you to think is how this is supposed to work, except when that happens against things in your body that they aren't supposed to attack. Right. So if it's circulating your bloodstream and this gets attached to things that aren't supposed to be happening, well, what happens? Well, your body attacks those parts of your body, which we're seeing, which is hurting people. Finally, a study that's willing to point this stuff out, but it's been there. It's always been there because we've been telling you. Under adverse reactions, it says, with regard to Pfizer vaccines, myocarditis has been a problem in the United States. Hemorrhagic stroke, arterial thrombosis, as well as dissecting aneurysm, dissecting aneurysm, and venous thrombosis and or pulmonary embolism may all be causally linked to the vaccination of COVID-19. Gee, I wonder where you've heard that before. Therefore, the fact that the number of days to deaths after inoculation is similar to the incubation period of COVID-19 in the medical workers or people under the age of 65 is biologically plausible and is also supports the causality. Now, just because it says all this doesn't necessarily make it the fact. What makes it the logical conclusion is that it's backed up by all of the data. It's backed up by other peer-reviewed science. And we actively watch the mainstream ignore all of that peer-reviewed science. What more do you need to see? Mortality risk of vaccination is 7 times higher than that of COVID-19 in 20s. Disproportionate increase of death from cardiovascular diseases was observed both among medical workers and elderly people who received COVID vaccine compared with general populations. That study goes back long before this. Why didn't the media talk about that? Well, you know why. Disproportionate increase of death among people who got the injection specifically from cardiovascular diseases, both medical workers and elderly people. The ones they forced it on first. Interesting. Based on such evidence and biological plausibility, causality between death from cardiovascular diseases and COVID-19 is substantially supported. One of the three cases they looked into, specifically on these, they picked out three of these cases. It says it was reported that he completed suicide due to psychosis. However, he actually accidentally died following abnormal behavior due to febrile delirium after vaccination. How many more of those do you think there are? Oh, he killed himself. After further investigation, it turns out that he had what's called febrile delirium, which was caused by the injection. But you'll never hear this outside of a Japanese study that points these things out in a place that you're never going to look unless we talk about it. I mean, it's incredible. Going forward, it says mortality risk based on the number of inoculated persons is 3 out of 940,000 persons. This is just based on the information they have, based on what they looked into. The point here is the contrast, not that that's the absolute risk of what we're dealing with. The contrast, however, it says mortality risk from COVID-19 is 7 out of 11.8 million persons in the same age group. So what does that mean? An obviously higher risk of the injection. It's undeniable in their study with the data that they pumped into it. 3 out of 940,000 versus 7 out of 11.8 million. COVID-19 being the 7 out of 11.8 million. Your risk is dramatically higher, 7 times, in fact, after the injection. Japanese Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare requires reports of serious cases and deaths within 28 days after inoculation, regardless of causal relationship. But they do not necessarily require reports of serious cases and deaths beyond 28 days post-inoculation. Same point as before. That is a self-serving ignorance. You're choosing not to look at something where you look. Basically, this guarantees, well, here's they say it next. Hence, if all deaths, including those that occur beyond 28 days of vaccination, were reported, risk may become higher. That's the point. And so this number becomes even more obvious. Because right now, we don't know the full picture. By using person-year methods, mortality risk from vaccination in 20s is about 40 times higher. 40 times higher. That is supposed to be the one. Then, yeah, okay, it's right here. 40 times higher than COVID-19 mortality risk. That's the follow-up after that sentence. 40 times higher. However, the mortality rate beyond 28 days should be lower than that within 28 days. So the mortality risk ratio after vaccination in 20s may be, in fact, between 5 to 40 times higher compared with death from COVID-19. You'll never see this dug into deeper by the mainstream. You just won't. Harm of vaccination in children may be enormous. There were no deaths due to COVID-19 infection under the age of 20 until September 1st, 2021 in Japan. Zero deaths, guys. Nonetheless, they were in lockstep with the same agenda. If children in this age group are vaccinated, it may cause death. Yeah, we know that already. We're seeing that already. The mortality rate risk, I mean, bottom line is if zero kids have died in Japan, and we know that it has happened, at least, whether rare or not, in regard to children after the injection, you are increasing risk. I mean, this is a no-brainer. The mortality risk ratio cannot be calculated. Why? Because the number of deaths from COVID-19 is zero in Japan until September 1st. They literally can't factor the risk. The bottom line is the risk is exponentially higher after vaccination for children because they haven't had any deaths. Pretty easy to look at, but they won't tell you that. The clinical trial of AstraZeneca's vaccine for children. This is crazy, actually, because by the way, AstraZeneca is still being given to people right now. You probably never heard this before. The clinical trial of AstraZeneca's vaccine for children, who don't need it, by the way, one in a million risk of dying, age 6 to 17 years old, was interrupted. It was due to 79 cases of thrombosis with thrombocytopenia, of which 19 have died. I mean, and this is still being given to people. 19 children died. Good God. Now, of course, they use this to argue, well, that's because Pfizer's better. But that's not true, though. Pfizer is way worse when you look at the data breakdown of what's being shown on the VAERS reports and everything else, as well as what they admit in the documentation but pretend isn't there. Hospitalization rate was 1% in the outbreak in Massachusetts. We've talked about the Massachusetts outbreak that proves in the, or shows you in this case that the vaccinated are the ones spreading this around and the ones catching it and spreading it. No death was reported among 469 confirmed COVID patients, which we know doesn't mean confirmed in the context of PCR tests, but as they mean it. Hence, the mortality risk from Delta strain COVID-19 is not high. Yep. Yet again. Because, I mean, remember, the point was that it was all they're trying to argue is the vaccination helped, it works for them, but that's not the way this is working. Other people in other circumstances are getting, it's not, the breakdown shows you that it's a wash almost. So at the end of the day, what we're staring at is people that got Delta, so they tell us, and didn't hurt them. That is what they were trying to use as making it look like the vaccine reduced their symptoms. It was just simply not as dangerous. That's what we said in the very beginning. Same thing's being done now. Most people have been infected at least once with SARS-CoV-2. Yep. As always, what that means? Natural immunity. We just discussed in the last show the newest study from Swiss Policy Research about natural immunity that, again, and it was actually a preprint study that they pointed out. I thought it was from Israel, I think, but it says that it's undeniable. Your natural immunity is exponentially better than whatever you're getting from these injections, and that found it yet again. The point is they know this. They know most people right now, one way or another, have already been infected, which means, as always, they have lasting immunity. Lasting, durable, robust, all of it, as we keep showing you. Because somebody, maybe one more person today tuned in that didn't see this last time. That if you have natural immunity and got sick all the way back in 2020, well, you're still making antibodies for 23 different variants, including variants of concern. Meanwhile, your so-called immunity you're getting for one spike protein for one strain that's not around anymore is not actually helping you. That's the injections to discussion. Here we are, making multiple variants antibodies, and that will probably last the rest of your life, according to Nature and the NIH and WHO and everybody. So why aren't they talking about it if they know most people have had it? Because that doesn't work with the agenda. Finally, even if children and adolescents and people in their 20s are infected, it is naturally mild or asymptomatic because they have less SARS-CoV-2 receptor ACE2 than adults, especially old people. Yeah, exactly, guys. Scientifically, something that they knew, ACE2 specifically. We talked about this way in the beginning. So even if this is severe, that's why they're not being affected, if you believe their narrative. And they know this, and yet they still argue they're all at risk because of unknowns. This is hurting these children, and they don't care. At the very least, they're well aware they're adding risk to some people that they know scientifically don't need this. It says it is ridiculous to consider vaccination for school children. Ridiculous. But what's happening anyway? We know that. Now, last point on this before we jump into the remdesivir point on this study before we go forward again, is something that Dr. Malone put out. Now, it should be clear by now that there's plenty of things that Dr. Malone and I don't agree on. Even within this, you know, I actually strongly feel that these injections are not smart for anybody. I really feel that way. That's my opinion, though, simply based on what I'm looking at, and as well as the negative intentions behind this that I think they're not considering, or historical issues of things that they might deem conspiracy theory despite not, and they're still just, you know, a couple steps behind on what they think is conspiracy theory when it's really what's happening, sort of like they thought COVID was bad until now. You know, like, these people were, before all of this, on a way different path. And the fact that they're now being called conspiracy theorists has kind of driven them into understanding these things aren't crazy, that they're just being named that. But yet there are still topics that they would still call crazy, even though they're still not crazy, right? My point is, in saying that, is that it's important to hear what he is saying, because he is an expert in this field, regardless of whether or not you think that you'll see what he says right in here about pro-vaccine and whatever else. That is almost the more reason why this is a valid point. He says, before your child is injected, watch Dr. Watch his statement, read his statement. I just want to read you his statement. Full text from Dr. Malone. He says, my name is Dr. Robert Malone. I am speaking to you as a parent, grandparent, physician, and scientist. I don't usually read from a prepared speech, but this is so important that I wanted to make sure that I got every single word and scientific fact correct. I stand by this statement with a career dedicated to vaccine research and development. I'm vaccinated for COVID, and I'm generally pro-vaccination. And he's been open with that the whole time. I have devoted my entire career to developing safe and effective ways to prevent and treat infectious diseases. After this, I will be posting this text and statement so you can read it. Before you inject your child, a decision that is irreversible, I want to let you know the scientific facts about this genetic vaccine, which is based on the mRNA vaccine technology that Dr. Malone himself created. Now, for those out there that keep kind of like arguing that he may have misrepresented, I've been maintaining from the very beginning that Dr. Malone has been very clear. He did not invent these vaccines. He invented the technology used in these vaccines. It even says that on his profile page. So here again, he's asserting the facts that are misrepresented, because that's one way they've tried to dismiss him, as claiming that he wrongly claims he did this when he never did. They base these vaccines on the technology he created. He says there are, which makes him an expert on this field, like the expert. Now it says these are three issues. There are three issues parents need to understand. This is so important, guys. The first is that a viral gene will be injected into your child's cells. This gene forces your child's body to make toxic spike proteins. We just read that, which goes through your bloodstream. These proteins often cause permanent damage in children's critical organs, including the brain and nervous system, their heart and blood vessels, including blood clots, their reproductive system. And this vaccine can trigger fundamental changes to the immune system. Peer-reviewed science has already made this clear. Yes, it can alter your DNA. Yes, it can genetically alter you. These things have already been shown. They just don't talk about it. People that don't listen to us continue forward acting like that's a conspiracy theory that's been debunked years ago. Peer-reviewed science has been very clearly going, yeah, here's more evidence. I mean, let me actually think, see if I can grab that one. Didn't pop up. Now, well, there's one that I showed recently where it just continued, doubled down. There's more evidence that it alters your DNA. And they just keep arguing it's fake news. So this is a guy who invented what they're using and knows more than anybody that this is what's happening. So if you dismiss this, that's a willful choice to remain ignorant. Now, it says the most alarming point about this is that once these damages have occurred, they are irreparable. I saw that tweet. That's weird. See, like, this highlighted has been, notice how it just changed those letters together? That's strange. I don't know why it keeps doing that. But it means irreversible, irreparable. They will not go back to the way they were. We've been telling you this too. You can't fix the lesions within your brain. You can't repair heart tissue scarring. You can't repair a genetically reset immune system, which is what's happening. This vaccine can cause reproductive damage that could affect future generations of your family. I've proven you this with Pfizer documentation that very clearly shows you an almost 10% decrease in reproductivity, infertility specifically. And because it wasn't over 25%, they argue they don't have to report it. People that don't know that pretend I'm lying. I've literally shown you on the show verbatim. The second thing you need to know about is the fact that this novel technology has not been adequately tested. And we'll prove that to you after the remdesivir part. It says it right on their documentation. 2 months. That's all they have to go on. We need at least 5 years of testing research before we can really understand the risks. Harms and risks from new medicines often become revealed many years later. They all know that. That's why they're rushing it. Ask yourself if you want your own child to be part of the most radical medical experiment in human history. One final point. The reason they're giving you to vaccinate your child is a lie. Okay, what they're giving you, the reason. Your children represent no danger to their parents or grandparents. It's actually the opposite. Their immunity after getting COVID is critical to save your family, if not the world, from this disease. Even if you disagree with that, please recognize that the argument that they're saying is that we need to inject them with something that they don't need and increase their risk to keep us safe. You're literally using the most vulnerable children as a barrier between you and COVID-19. That is cowardly. In summary, there is no benefit for your children or your family to be vaccinating your children against the small risks of the virus. Given the known health risks of the vaccine that as a parent, you and your children may have to live with for the rest of your lives. The risk-benefit analysis isn't even close, the expert says. As a parent and grandparent, my recommendation to you is to resist and fight to protect your children. Now, I go even further. When you understand, his argument would be that he feels the risk of COVID is large enough in certain age populations to justify this. I don't agree with that. I think the risk has been overblown, manipulated from every possible direction. Even if you think the most at risk over 75 or 60 are the problem, you remove that risk from the situation and every other category is dramatically lower than the flu. On top of that, you can see the other part of that that shows you the injections are dramatically hurting them specifically, right? So factor this part of it in and you see that there's no positive way in this situation. That's my opinion, backed up by the facts. But here's the expert telling you what you should be hearing, what you need to know from somebody who knows this better than anybody. Now, on another note, something I found that I want to show you really quickly was, again, back to baricitinib. I don't know why they name these things so crazy. Specifically for treating COVID. Now, before we get into that, let me show you, was it this one? Right, so this is in the abstract specifically for baricitinib plus remdesivir for hospitalized adults with COVID-19. This was on March 4th, 2021. Severe coronavirus disease, COVID-19, is associated with dysregulated inflammation. The effects of combination treatment with this drug and they call that a Janus kinase inhibitor, plus remdesivir are not known. That's what they're supposed to find out. Now, what's interesting is they basically find out that, well, this plus remdesivir was superior to just remdesivir by itself, which doesn't really stand strong. When you see the rest of the information, it's going to be very clear why that is, because remdesivir, not only doesn't it dramatically hurt people, but their finding in this study is that it doesn't do anything. So obviously it was better when you take nothing and add baricitinib, that's ridiculous. I'm going to call it baricitinib to make it easy. Baricitinib, adding with nothing, of course, it's going to increase what you're dealing with because nothing does nothing. But it says in reducing recovery time and accelerating improvement in clinical status among the patients. Okay, so they use this to argue why these things should be good and generally arguing why remdesivir should be used, even though that's not really what that finds. This was, oh, it's okay, going forward right here. Okay, so here's the main part of this. It finds that the ACTT1 trial, this is what it was used, this is in regard to remdesivir, which is supposed to be the evidence for the effect of remdesivir, they say is not valid. Moreover, it was also proven ineffective in the meta-analysis, including the largest WHO trial, which is true. ACTT2 study, This one cannot be the evidence for the efficacy of this drug, baricitinib, as it involved concomitant use of an ineffective medicine. That's remdesivir. Isn't that interesting? Now there's more. Here's what it says. Baricitinib, trade name Alluminate, weird, was approved in April 2021. For the treatment of COVID-19, this is for rheumatoid arthritis, following remdesivir and dexamethasone on the condition that it was specifically used together. right? So they approve these other two things only if it's used with remdesivir. That seems very strange to me, especially seeing as how it seemed to have no effect unless used with those things. Also knowing that there's other things that have obviously verified effects that work better. Here it says remdesivir is used as a basal agent for the treatment of COVID-19 in this study. However, ACTT1 study, which we're talking about, which is used as evidence to support the efficacy of remdesivir, is not reliable. And again, they cite it, which you can read for yourself, which I'm already showing you. Moreover, a meta-analysis which included the largest study conducted by the WHO showed that remdesivir is ineffective. Thus, WHO does not recommend its use. And we've already shown you that. On their own website, they say you should not use it for COVID-19. So ask yourself why the U.S. government is using it as the sole treatment for prophylactic treatment. From these facts, or not even prophylactic, really, it's about people treating people that are sick. From these facts, it can be concluded that baricitinib plus remdesivir combination therapy is ineffective for specifically severe pneumonia caused by COVID-19. In fact, it's quite the opposite, as we've already shown you. My interview with Dr. Artis, which I should have had pulled up. I'm not going to grab it. I feel like it's going to freeze on me. Look up Dr. Artis on my website. We had a great interview. We just showed it the other day. Here is the study, also on the New England Journal of Medicine, which shows you, you can just see it right here. This is a randomized controlled trial for Ebola back on December 12th, 2019. And this is the graph that Dr. Artis and I discussed. And it shows you very clearly, which we just showed you, that of these drugs they're dealing with, specifically ZMapp, remdesivir, and Regeneron, and some other ones over here, look at the overall. And then what you see here under each one is the number of deaths total and percentage. Okay. So overall, remdesivir killed 53.1% of those who took it, 93 out of 175. ZMapp killed only 49.7. Regeneron, 33.5. 53.1%, that's dead after remdesivir. So we took something that we knew seemed that obviously 53% of people die is probably not a good thing to use. And on top of that, something that seems to be ineffective in general. Maybe that's why it was chosen. Any case, take that information and apply it to your understanding because you're being lied to. And to make that all the more clear, right from the horse's mouth. This is on ema.europa.eu, a European post, European website, or from the European government website, and this is Pfizer documentation. Let me bring this up real quick so you guys can see the top. Comirnaty risk management plan. Okay, now this is September 24th. So for those, you guys can see this right here, just so you can see this on the European government website. So this is not some fringe document. And here's one of the most important parts, September 24th. It says, vaccine-associated enhanced disease. Sort of sounds like antibody-dependent enhancement or molecular mimicry or any of the other things we keep telling you about. Basically meaning that the vaccine is associated with enhancing disease in your body. Oh, weird. Isn't that fake news? Apparently not, because they're concerned about it, including vaccine-associated enhanced respiratory disease. No joke. Literally giving you a vaccine that can cause the respiratory disease, which then gets labeled COVID-19. Who would have thought? Here's what it says. That vaccine-associated enhanced disease may present as severe or unusual clinical manifestations of COVID-19. What do you know? Are we really going to pretend that people are being given an injection, which then leads to, I don't know, COVID-19 pneumonia, which they also blame on COVID-19, or any number of other things, any number of the things we keep talking about, and that they would then back up and go, oh, the vaccine maybe. Of course not. They're not even considering that because one, they know they're going to be attacked for it, and two, they know they're not supposed to. If somebody has pneumonia, a cold, COVID-19 symptoms, or any other variation of problem after the injection, they call it COVID-19. They call it a breakthrough case. But is that what's happening? Their conclusion is literally telling you that it may present as severe or unusual manifestations of COVID-19. It's amazing. This is stated right on their documentation, but this is fake news right now and anybody in the main sphere. Overall, there were 37 subjects with suspected COVID-19 and 101 subjects with confirmed COVID-19, which just means PCR test, following one or both doses of the vaccine. Here's the important part on top of that part. 75 of those 101 confirmed cases were severe, resulting in hospitalization, disability, life-threatening consequences, or death. These are all vaccinated people. So 101 people who are fully vaccinated end up being told they have COVID-19, which really could just be the vaccine causing these things or however you want to look at it. But 75 of those had severe problems, hospitalization, disability, life. Does that sound rare? Not even remotely. None of those 75 cases could be definitively considered as vaccine induced. Why? Because you can't prove that. It's damn near impossible. But why then in their documentation are they saying this can happen? They're literally saying, yes, this can happen. This may present as COVID-19. Simultaneously, we can't prove any of it though. So this is sort of like a admitting but not admitting. In the updated review, there were 425 subjects with confirmed COVID-19 following one dose of the vaccine, 288 of which were severe. Again, that's not rare. Unreal. Going forward, under the same discussion but different point of vaccine-associated enhanced disease, just want to again point out when they're talking about the criteria and what they're searching for to potentially put this down is COVID-19 pneumonia. Now, think about the connection with remdesivir. Think about the connection with everything else we're talking about, the masks, which lead to bacterial pneumonia. I mean, all of this stuff is kind of converged, and you can see that it goes whichever way they want it to. You will never have a proof of this because it will always go down to something else. I mean, how is it literally COVID-19 pneumonia when you're talking about the vaccine causing it? Well, clearly it's not COVID-19 pneumonia if the vaccine caused pneumonia, right? But yet they're searching for COVID-19 pneumonia in their criteria for put. It's just, this is, it's self-serving. Now, here's the biggest part of this. And a shout out to Orwell in the chat for sending this to me. September 24th. Table 25 and all the tables going down from here in this section. Actually, starting right here. Did I skip that one? Anyway, it says presentation of the missing information. I thought there wasn't anything missing. I thought this was the most sound safety trial and work ever since history of time, right? Okay. Well, let's see what they tell you they're missing. Well, it's going to be exactly what we've been telling you they're missing and yet still forcing. Use in pregnant women and breastfeeding. Well, shocker. The safety profile of the vaccine is not known in pregnant or breastfeeding women due to their initial exclusion from the pivotal clinical study. Yep, and that hasn't changed. So they don't know if it's safe. It says it right there. It says it on their other documentation too. I've shown you that as well. And yet they're telling people it's safe. The media, the government, in fact, in many ways, forcing them if they have a job position where that's the case. We've already shown you all of those examples. But here's the craziest part. Next thing it says, There may be pregnant women who choose to be vaccinated despite the lack of safety data. Oh, is that what's happening? They're being informed that there's no safety data and they're willfully going, I don't care about that. These people are disgusting criminals. These are women that are being told that it's safe. That's why they're doing it. And here they write it down as well. They may do it despite there's no safety. They don't know that. Crazy. And then it also says, by the way, because it's an open experiment on these people, it will be important to follow those women for pregnancy and birth outcomes. That's why they're doing it. They want them to take it so they can find out what will happen, my opinion. It says the clinical consequences of COVID-19 infection to the woman and the fetuses during pregnancy is not yet fully understood. Oh, so what do you know exactly? Well, you know that you're giving them an injection that you want them to take. That's what they know. Well, here's the next part. Oh, but here, I want to make sure you see this part too. The lack of data is communicated in product labeling. Oh, really? The label that nobody gets to see and up until very recently weren't even put out. And now we're talking about, nobody talks about this stuff. The informed consent is not supposed to be on some 30-page write-out. It's supposed to be what you're told before you take it. That's what informed consent is. They're pretending that they can write this on some page that's not given to anybody and therefore their informed consent. These are criminals. It gets way worse. Immunocompromised patients. I've been saying this from the very beginning of this. Immunocompromised people used to be the ones that were told not to get anything like this because they don't know. Now it's turned around. That's where they're the first ones that should get it. Well, guess what, guys? They don't know if it's safe for them. The vaccine has not been studied in individuals with overt immunocompromised conditions. They are forcing this on the people that they want to see what happens. The ones they don't know if it's safe. In fact, it's not safe for anybody based on all the evidence we see. Meaning it's dangerous. Meaning by definition, it can cause harm. If it can cause harm, it's not safe. That does not have to mean to you that it's the worst dangerous thing in the world. Definitions and words mean things. Dangerous means it can cause harm. They've admitted it can cause harm. Therefore, this is a dangerous vaccine. That's a fact. If immunocompromised people are not known to be safe after taking this, why are they forcing it on them? Why are they telling them they should be the first to rush in to get it? Why are they using them as the group to take the first boosters? Oh, we've already, you know, ordered for 65 and immunocompromised. Well, guess what? They also don't know if it's safe for the elderly. That's not a joke. Of course, safety data will be collected on these individuals to find out if it's safe. So we're using them as a test, of course. But here's the next part. Use in frail patients with comorbidities, you know, like elderly people in nursing homes, diabetes, chronic neurological disease, cardiovascular disorder, all sorts of stuff. Guess what? The vaccine has been studied in individuals with stable chronic diseases, obesity, hypertension, you know, the average people in the country. However, it has not been studied in frail individuals with severe comorbidities that may compromise immune function due to the condition of treatment of the condition. You mean like most people in their elderly situations? You mean like people that have multiple comorbidities and were 94% of the total people that died? Yeah, maybe that's why. Maybe it's because it did find out and they kept this from your view. Or maybe because they chose not to look because they knew. Or maybe because they just didn't look at all and they didn't know. Either way, if you're literally forcing it on the elderly, the immunocompromised, and telling pregnant women that it's safe when none of that is known, this is the largest criminal experimentation in human history. And we know that. This is right on their documentation, guys, and it's telling you that the elderly people, the frail with comorbidities, they don't know if it's safe. That category is driving everything, just like New York in the beginning point that made clear. Without what happened there and what's continued to happen in nursing homes and still happening, this is not even remotely what it looks like. Use in patients with autoimmune and inflammatory disorders. Also people that are being given, they don't know. There is limited information on the safety, but yet it's still being given to these people. And all of these say the same thing. We will collect the data on them to use our, yeah, of course you will. Interactions with other vaccines. How long have I been telling you that? Right now, they are giving it with, they're giving this to children with flu vaccines right next to one another. However, there is no data on the interaction of these injections with other vaccines. This is not scientific. This is not even medically sound. This is dangerous. You are hurting people. They know that at some level. If you don't know if it's safe next to the flu shot, how can you give them the flu shot? Because vaccine's good? I mean, I don't even know how anybody out there can be watching and listening to this part and still walk away thinking we're conspiracy theorists. That is ridiculous and dangerous. And it's happening with more than just the flu shots, right? Mix and match, which, by the way, we're going to get into another part here where they show you yet again that oh, I actually already showed you that in a previous show. That study came out that showed you that mixing the schedules is what is in large part or in part leading to myocarditis or causing it, I should say, in the context of the study, mind you, because it's not generally taking these injections alone are causing this extreme problem. But then when you're mixing and matching things, it's dramatically increasing that problem and they don't care about this. And why there's no data to back it up. Why would they do it in the first place? And this is the most important part. Long-term safety data. What they're all screaming, including the media, including even doctors and scientists that are experts in other fields that don't know this because they're trusting the narrative, are screaming. It's been the longest safety trial of all time, right? We've heard that how many times? Longest safety trial in history. Longest blah, 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 blah. Here's the point. Easily verifiable if you care to look it up, as we continue to do. At this time, right now, 2-month post-dose 2 safety data are available for approximately half of the patients who have received COVID-19 vaccines in study C4591001. 2 months. That's what you get. We have 2 months post dose two. End of story. Oh, and the study is ongoing. In contradiction to what all of the media and Twitter sphere are saying. That's just where they were estimating. No, they're still testing on you right now. And I think you know that somewhere and you're just afraid to admit it to yourself. That's crazy. It is not sound. We are giving something to people when they don't know whether it's safe in general, and then we don't know if it's safe in the long term. Children, pregnant women, immunocompromised, all of them. We don't know anything, apparently, whether it's safe now or in the long term, and we're doing it anyway. I shouldn't say we, obviously. They are forcing it anyway. That's just crazy to me. At the time of the vaccine availability, the long-term safety of COVID-19 mRNA vaccine is not fully known. Just absorb that. They don't know the full safety profile, and yet the media would tell you otherwise. It just blows my mind. It really does. But hopefully we could take this out, get it in front of other people. But right now, all these people are being put at risk, and they know that. This brings me to somebody who was put at risk, potentially on purpose. And we have to consider that. As I said before, on December 11th, and this is after I saw the report, Julian Assange has stroke in jail as fiancé blames the stress of the extradition. I said, lately, this all feels a bit like they're tipping the board over because they see they're about to lose. This, along with all the other weird things that were happening. I said, we should be asking whether something was done to him. If he was given the injection, which he was, and I'll show you next, was it spiked? Or was it just given knowing that it would cause this problem, even whether it's spiked or not? If you're balking at me even saying that, then you don't understand the history of your own country or the CIA or the groups that have done that over and over and over and over and over and assassinated people in front of everybody. But it says would be much easier for them to if he just had a stroke and they could blame COVID. Exactly. I said, I want to know if he was forced to take the injection in prison. And I asked people to let me know, and they did. And here's why, because I linked to this article, which says very clearly right up here. This basically said he's being held in this prison. And it says after he had a stroke, he reportedly was left with a drooping right eyelid, which right out of the gate, all these things can be caused by stroke alone. Drooping right eyelid, memory problems, and signs of neurological damage. However, the idea of right after an injection or following the injection, getting a stroke and all of these things could be the injection based on everything we know. And then you factor in the reality of what his father would tell you.
En termes de vaccination, de soins, d'aide psychologique, est-ce que Julian a accès à la vaccination, accès aux moyens de protection comme des masques? Est-ce qu'il a assez de couverture? Est-ce qu'il a été malade? Est-ce que l'administration pénitentiaire fait suffisamment attention à sa santé physique et mentale? Est-ce qu'il a une aide psychologique?
Now, he basically asked, for those on the podcast, it's a bunch of questions, and they cut the beginning and back and forth. He basically just asked him if he has access to masks and whatever else, and if they've treated him. And here's his response. This is what's important.
Well, I don't think so. I don't think there's any reason for a publisher and journalist and an intellectual who hasn't broken any laws to be in a maximum security jail 22 hours a day in a cell.
First of all, think about that. No laws. This is an argument by the U.S. government that they violated their national security and their law. There's no law, especially when you figure that he's not an American citizen and this didn't take place in the United States. But the point is, even if you feel he did break a law, he's not a violent criminal. He's not. Everything they're doing is 22 hours a day in a maximum security prison. That is torture in and of itself. That is meant to hurt him. It's punitive before he's even been charged or found guilty. Think about that.
I don't think so. As for medical treatment, Julian Assange is in the complete disposal of the jail administration. If he doesn't want to take a medicine, it goes on his list and it produces in court. If he does want to take a medicine, it equally goes on his list and produces in court. So with the vaccines, he has been vaccinated, of course, because all of the prisoners in the jail are vaccinated. So he has no choice in this. He has no choice about anything. He has no control over his body. He has only choice as to what he may think about from this minute to the next minute. What?
It's just disgusting, isn't it, that that's even being allowed? But to the point, again, I'm glad somebody sent this to me, and the point is that he was, you know, wasn't, essentially, we didn't have a choice, right? I don't know if we can argue if he was forced to do it, but clearly forced in the sense of being coerced in a situation where if he didn't, it was going to be used against him, right? So here we are, and it's obvious that this is possible. I really want to know if this is something, I mean, like we'll ever be able to find out, but whether this was something that was done to him at such an exactly relevant time. It's alarming. Then consider the idea of the exposés, discussion, and plenty of others of the batches. And now there's an obviously verifiable reality that certain Pfizer batches were more deadly than others. Then you need to ask whether or not those were intentionally given to certain locations as a test, as an attack, who knows? And then would that be a factor here, knowing which one to give to him? If you're balking, if you think that's all a bunch of conspiracy theory, then it's a childish mentality. These are valid questions based on valid facts that we can prove. And just because some media personality has told you that that concept is fake and scary and dangerous and conspiracy theory, you choose to name it so, makes you a child. Think for yourself. How about that? Even if that may be wrong, understand that the willingness to consider somebody else's perspective without accepting it wholeheartedly, that is called intelligence. Now, one last point in regard to the inflammation and what we were just kind of proving right there, you know, all their data showing you that this is damaging to your body and everything else. I want to quickly show you the video of the person we just reported the other day, Lindelof, clutching his chest and having chest pains and the whole thing. And then I'm going to show you another point in regard to what it's being done to children. Then we're going to finish off with the Victorian Canadian discussion and then finally surveillance. But check this out, just so you can continue to see that this is valid, because there's people that were acting like this wasn't real. Right? Clearly a heart problem, touching his heart, or chest, rather. They actually tried to argue that he bumped into somebody. Oh, he bumped into somebody and then for 10 minutes had breathing problems. It's like, come on. That's not a joke. That's what they actually argued. Yeah. And so they had to take him off the field because he just couldn't regain. That's exactly what we've been hearing from a lot of people. A lot. Now, you could just be looking at a less severe version of everything else we're seeing. We've heard that from a lot of people, that they can't catch their breath and they're having the same problem. And that all leads into everything we're talking about. Now, as Sick of It All points out, and tied with Canadian, which is a perfect segue, now a hockey league is forcing the jab on 5 to 11-year-olds. 5 to 11-year-olds, a hockey league. Same thing we're going to start seeing as everywhere else. It's already happened in Canada, the United States, children as well as grown adults. For whatever reason, the mainstream, or I guess not the mainstream, but the middle ground here, the quasi-mainstream independent, have really picked up on the collapsing athlete part. But and haven't my first coverage of this was like 50-50. It's like it's children and adults, and it's a lot. For whatever reason, they're still getting attention, which is great. But there's a lot happening on youth athletics. Specifically soccer and football. I showed you a bunch of them. So here we are at a point where we're seeing this happen. We are literally verifying the reality of the inflammation, the fact that kids don't need this, that they're not at risk, that it increases their risk of myocarditis, the fact that they're using them as a barrier, the fact that all of this stuff has been shown to actually hurt them, especially if they've already had the infection, which most of them have. And they're forcing it on them. But here's the best part. They took the page down. Now, why would they do that? Why would the Greater London Hockey Association remove something that they were proudly supporting? Well, because they knew that it was hurting them. But lucky for you, somebody saved it on the Wayback Machine. As many of you are aware, they said, when the 2021-2022 season began, GLHA mandated vaccine for all eligible players. Because you're a horrific authoritarian. I mean, it's just, you know, like they're proud, right? Obviously. because that's what they're supposed to think. But this is disgusting. You're forcing people to get a medical intervention to be able to play in your hockey league. Like, you guys should all, nobody should go back here. This is them forcing their politics on people. This requirement was extended to 12-year-olds. 12-year-olds. 19-year-olds have a 1 in a million chance of dying. You have a dramatically increased risk of myocarditis, which increases your potential risk of mortality by up to 50% over the next 10 years. But yeah, let's give them that. Let's force them to take the injection so they can keep playing a sport that they love. You utter criminals. In keeping with the GLHA's position on immunization, correct, it's our political position, they're forcing on everybody else because that's become politically acceptable today. At the start of the 2021-2022 season, and with support from the Middlesex London Health Unit, the GLHA will be expanding their vaccination requirements to 5 to 11-year-olds. Hashtag boycott the Greater London Hockey Association. Anybody out there should be screaming about this and telling them that this is so incredibly wrong. Why do they think they have the right to mandate an experimental and unapproved injection? You realize that is still experiment, that is the emergency authorized version, 5 to 11s. All of them are, in fact, because they're not, the Comirnaty is not in circulation in this country right now, at least in most every location. Now, I keep pushing that off. I will go over that fact check they argued to say that's not the truth. It's such an obvious, easy debunkable fact check, but today wasn't important enough. But this is what they're doing. It's okay. It's okay. And they support it. They agree with it, right? They proudly suggest we're going to do it because that's all the right thing to do. And then they delete their page. Cowards, meek, feeble cowards, and they should be called as such. But speaking of Canada, one of the most alarming bills I think I've ever seen in the context of this, but really, I mean, really just in general, like, this is an incredible overreach. Here's the information itself. You can read through it, but this article does a great job encapsulating it all. Rule of Law Education Center goes over this. Victorian Pandemic Management Bill from November 2nd. I hadn't seen this. This is crazy to me. The Victorian government's latest pandemic legislation, the Public Health and Wellbeing Amendment Pandemic Management Bill 2021, has been the subject of some serious concern within the legal profession. In an open letter signed by some of Victoria's leading silks, that's weird, in states. Maybe that's a term for some, like a position. I'm not familiar with that. The overriding concern, they state, is that the bill, if passed, may allow the Victorian government effectively to rule the state of Victoria by decree for the foreseeable future without proper parliamentary oversight or the usual checks and balances on executive power. It says, we've always viewed this as a rule of law issue, not as a political issue. There are no real checks and balances in the legislation. There's no oversight at all by Parliament. Does that sound like a government? Or does it sound like the illusion of a process? And really, they're just people that are unelected technocrats that are driving positions and decisions in your government. In the interview with Mr. Chris Bladen, CQ states, this is legislation that any sensible person reading it would agree, has very extensive powers given to the government, and those powers on occasion are necessary, but this is enshrining in legislation powers without the necessary checks and balances. Powers that can't be taken away without the approval of people that put them in place. That's what's happening. Meaning it'll never go away. It's the Patriot Act in Canada going forward. It is a mystery why this has to be pushed through so quickly. Not really a mystery at all, and why there hasn't been time given to discuss, debate, etc., how those powers should be controlled by the Parliament. This is crazy. There's a reason why this is being pushed in and everywhere, because they don't want you to think about this. They want it to be rushed in under a guise of, we're all going to die, so you don't think about it, which is exactly what happened with the Patriot Act and everything else. Anthrax drove that forward as well, the psyop that was. They fear-mongered people into rushing something in that they knew would destroy this country in the ways they wanted it to. Here are the questions. Will lockdowns continue in this new bill? The Premier and Health Minister will have absolute, unreviewable power to indefinitely keep Victorians in lockdown, if they so choose. This can be done even if there are zero cases. Oops, that's weird. This page is really sensitive with the scroll. I don't know why it's doing that. Jeez. I won't zoom in. Here we go. Okay. This can be done even if there are zero cases in Victoria and can be for an indefinite period of time. How can you even enshrine something like that in legislation? This is enshrining totalitarianism. That's what this is. Zero cases for as long as you want. So you don't even have a risk. We can just say, well, variant over there on the other side of the world. Well, just in case, we're going to lock down for 20 years. All right, that's what that means. Or for 2 days or for a month or for as long as we want. It says the health minister can make rules. Just make rules however they want. Now, the primary consideration in making the rule will simply be whether they are reasonably necessary to protect public health, which means whatever they want it to. They can make up the context, which means, well, that seems reasonable to protect your health against the thing we say is dangerous, even if it might not be dangerous or it might not even be there. It doesn't matter. It's subjective. It's how they frame and set the table. The rules have not been limited in any way and will continue to be broad-reaching and can restrict movement, require masks, or require persons to be subject to detention or quarantine requirements. On top of that, they can pick and choose who gets discriminated against, which used to be called discrimination, but not then, not now. They can pick a certain group, a certain protest area, a certain race, and say, you guys have to wear masks. You guys have to lock down. Not a joke. A pandemic, and think about this coming from the Canadian government at this point. Equitable and fair and racism's bad and everything they're pushing. And here they are literally discriminating against groups based on their race. A pandemic order can be directed to specific groups or class of persons. Hold on a second. I'm worried I just made a monumental mistake here. All of a sudden, I was just wondering if this is Australia. I don't know why I didn't consider that before. Victoria. Shoot. Well, if it was, I'm glad I'm finding it now in real time. But let me look. Hold on. Let's look this up real quick. My mind was so immersed in the Canadian discussion that I think I just jumped right to that. Let me make sure real quick here. It's got to be something that ties to. Let's do this. Canada? Okay, it does look like it. Canada, Australia. Okay, so it's both? That's interesting. Let's look here. No? Yeah, it looks like Australia. Damn it, that sucks. Damn it. All right, well, I have to change the title, obviously, but that's frustrating. Okay, well, we're going to keep going forward. It's just as relevant. I'm just really mad that I made that just that. See, and this, again, point, as always, that we all make mistakes, right? That we in general, just like, even if it's not truly relevant to the larger point, I was actually hoping it was going to be relevant to Canada because of those other points, and that's probably why my mind made that jump. But, you know, it all happens. Anyway, back to the point. Australia, which makes more sense in regard to where Australia is currently at, but Canada is also going that direction. I mean, I think we need to see that everywhere is doing that. I think I made that point earlier in the show that ultimately, I feel like we're all going that direction. I think the United States might be even worse than anybody, but it's just framing it differently. But in any case, let me just quickly think and make sure that there wasn't, I think, yeah, we just started this. Okay, there's no other issue other than the title. So it's really just Australians' totalitarian law. Okay, so just making sure there wasn't anything else I wanted to correct. I'm glad I caught that in real time. Okay, let's keep going forward. So, all the same points, but applying to Australia. Indefinite period of time. Okay, so the primary consideration in making the rule be whether or not there's reasonable. The rules have not been limited in any way. And and can be broad reaching and restrict movement and do whatever they want. Oh, that's where we were. Okay. And this is what just, I don't know why I didn't pick up on this when I read this earlier. Aboriginal. Oh, son of a gun. Forgot I wasn't going to zoom in again. It talks about Aboriginal as one of the groups that you can discriminate against. Don't know why I didn't catch that. See, it's always capable. So a pandemic order can be directed to specific groups or class of persons. That's what I mean. It just blows me away. I mean, by the way, that was a point to correct. The point is Canada's one that's really, really forward on the idea of, you know, equity and and social justice. But Australia is the same, in at least in the context of the government, right? So they're openly saying they're allowing their government to discriminate based on a person's race under the context of COVID-19. Talk about being a hypocrite. It says it can discriminate against aged card facilities, people in detention facilities, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people as a category, and people with a disability. So you're going to make them lock down, make them wear masks, restrict their movement? How can you even argue? This is just simply by saying that they're more at risk or their areas are less vaccinated. That's what it comes down to. These are probably people that are more so less vaccinated, so they're going to punish them for it. But it's just simply racism, especially in the context of how we're seeing it discriminated against people that have a historical reason to be hesitant about the government. But it says they can specifically cancel or restrict their rights in order to protect the health of the wider community. There is nothing about that that is legal or even justified, international law or otherwise. They're saying we can specifically target the Aboriginal community, restrict their rights to protect other people. That's just gross. The new rules also allow authorized officers, such as police officers, work safe inspectors, and health service providers to take actions and give directions that they believe are reasonably necessary to protect public health. What does that mean? They could do whatever they want, as long as they feel it's reasonably necessary. I'll change this real quick. There we go. Update that title on at least the ones I can really quickly. So if the officers themselves are being given carte blanche, essentially, to make choices, as long as they reasonably protect health, I mean, that's the same kind of language they use in the Patriot Act. That one would reasonably believe, it's like, well, what does that even mean? The argument of what's reasonable to someone versus somebody else is so subjective, and that's exactly the point. People reasonably believe that wearing a mask is healthy for you, despite the fact that's literally the opposite in every possible way. This will give an individual authorized officer the power to restrict your movement of his own volition, detain a person for a period, provide information, or even shut down a political protest. There you go. So long as they just simply believe personally, which is a subjective concept, it is reasonably necessary to protect public health. Now suddenly they can just be like, okay, you guys are out here without masks or shutting down the protest, even though your protest is about masks. Doesn't matter. You're not fitting our narrative, therefore we're shutting you down. You're done. Individuals must provide information to an authorized officer, regardless of whether it was it would implicate them in a wrongdoing. Meaning that you now have to provide information to that officer, even if it shows that you broke the law, which used to be, at least in the United States, Fifth Amendment. Their power, just so you see this, gosh darn it, I keep forgetting that. I don't know why that keeps doing that. The website is strange. Their power, as it says, is unreviewable. Make sure you hear that. Australia government power is unreviewable. But that's supposed to be democracy, right? The health minister will provide a statement of reasons as to why human rights, such as the right to movement, your privacy, your right to peaceful assembly, have been limited. Okay, that's it. So as long as we give you a reason why we're violating your inherent rights, then it's okay. Now, rather than the usual cross-party parliamentary committee that happens when you do things like this to oversee and provide parliamentary oversight of the pandemic orders, there will instead be an internal government body controlled by the premier that will review the pandemic orders. Great. So the premier who put it in place is in control of the person who's supposed to challenge and oversight. So he's in control of the person who's supposed to hold him accountable. That's stupid. And it says, and recommend disallowance on narrow grounds and make recommendations regarding human rights that are unduly impacted. So even the person he puts in place, who he has control over, or she, can then suggest changes and they can go, no, never mind, I don't like that. So it's a meaningless facade. It doesn't do anything. Even worse than that, the facade of the actual oversight is the pretend counterbalance. A second body called an Independent Pandemic Management Advisory Committee, made up of human rights, public health, and community representatives, will also consider the impact of the pandemic orders and table a report in Parliament. Oh, but guess what? The committee can only make recommendations. So nothing. It's a meaningless shell. They can they sit there, they make recommendations, they can just dismiss or not even acknowledge. It's a facade. Now, what if you violate these orders that are just completely without boundaries? Carte blanche. They can do whatever they want, whenever they want, as long as they want. And what if you don't like these or you disagree? Well, they can fine you as an individual up to $21,000 or almost $22,000 for breaking the order. Or if it's a business, they can fine you $109,000. You know, essentially breaking you if you're an individual that's struggling right now with what's going on. Now, however, if you're caught deliberately breaching those orders, which comes down to the subjective opinion of the person who's holding you accountable, right? Which is what we keep telling you. Well, they go, oh, well, clearly you meant to do this. Well, that has the potential to be, you can be fined now almost $100,000 and get 2 years in prison. Businesses, almost $500,000. Simply the difference is if they decide you meant to do it, which may be wrong, but your opinion doesn't play a factor. You can be put in jail for 2 years for violating an unjust, illegal, authoritarian mandate. Welcome to your democracy. Welcome to your new normal. Pandemic orders will be lawful so long as the health ministry believes they're reasonably necessary to protect. Look, that's even crazier. It's not just they're reasonable necessary. This is now the health minister who personally believes that these orders are reasonably necessary to protect public health. That's subjective on top of subjective. It will be very difficult to prove in court, the Rule of Law Education Center argues, and I agree, that the pandemic orders are unlawful, so long as the minister just simply believes they're reasonably necessary and they make that argument in front of the court. There is no coming back from this. In fact, they're already probably gone. Petitions and letters to the MPs will have some value, but at the decisions of the premier and health minister are not open to debate scrutiny. Your voice may not be heard, or let's be clear, it won't be heard. So you're sure, petition us. We'll just ignore it, is what that means. But you could feel free to do it, though. Under the current law, the state of emergency cannot be extended beyond December 15th. Did you know that if you're in Australia? Probably not. Right now, they're not allowed to extend it past December 15th. So that's why this is being rolled out. To continue to protect the public health of Victorians, they claim a new bill is required. So now they're about to lose their emergency powers. So they just write into law the forever emergency power. Exactly what we've always seen. Exactly what Ron Paul always points out, that when they argue there's a problem and we cry foul about that problem, they go, yeah, we'll fix it for you. And they even give you a bill that's called Fix the Problem. But within that bill, you find out all they really did was enshrine that problem into law. So then when you confront it, you're like, well, we fixed the problem, right? It's no longer illegal, so we're not breaking the law anymore. Didn't that fix it? No, it didn't. Because it wasn't that it was illegal. It was because it was violating our rights. Here we are. It continues forward, and it won't be stopped unless we stop it. I really apologize about that mix-up of that. I'm really embarrassed that I even made that mistake. But as always, the point to take away there is that this is something that can happen. We all make mistakes, guys. This is a good takeaway for you to think, hey, I need to make sure I vet what Ryan tells me, right? I know that hands down, James Corbett is light years ahead of me in regard to all the work and citation that he does, but I emulate him. That's why I do that, because of I grew up on his work, right? But at the end of the day, even we can make mistakes. So if you're just taking the information we have and go, well, he cites everything, so he must be right. We could be wrong, right? Make sure you vet this stuff and you do your own research. You might catch something that I miss. I rely on you guys. Now, here was this in general that you can look through for yourself if you want to go deeper on this. And then I guess I'll include this one too since I looked it up. I don't know. You know, I don't know what this site is, so I'm just going to get rid of this one. This one has all the information. That's the actual page. So finishing off on the point of social credit, which I really do think this is what it all leads to, the infrastructure and how this is being used. We just discussed this on the last show. The COVID social credit system is here, and I really believe that. I believe it's always been here in social credit in some way or another. We're just not seeing it. But now, this is included so you can watch the previous discussion, and these are the ones we just discussed the other day. Let me play this clip for you again so you can hear where this is already happening in Israel. And then we'll get to the last two points about where this is now in other places in the world that are using the same argument. Oh, that's right. I forgot. It's in Israel, in Hebrew. Just for those, I'll include the clip. You can watch it for yourself. But what he says, and this is the Prime Minister of Israel, Naftali Bennett, saying, "We finished developing an advanced monitoring system. Every Israeli citizen at any point in time will receive a score from 1 to 10 that represents a probability for him to be contagious. We connect your COVID test results with your GPS data. They're tracking people based on the claim that they're sick. This is never going away. And by the way, as I said, and I've played this before, it's already been there. They already put it out back at the beginning of this and got pulled back. Now, remember on November 28th, I believe, this is when they tried to propose it again. Shin Bet Security Agency proposes new civil body to digitally track Omicron. They went away from the civil body and they, in fact, wanted Shin Bet to do it, which is basically their intelligence agencies. Right, so they're your CI, your FBI is essentially tracking you internally. That's what the equivalent in Israel, using your data to track you with everything. It violates your rights left and right. But the point was that this then got put back down. So the next month, enough pushback was seen by the Israeli population, and so they pulled it back again. But I promise you, it's not stopping. It's probably never stopped. It probably was always there. Regardless, it shows you there is pushback from the Israeli people. But making sure you saw that development again, because that is what's happening right now. And he's openly telling you that it's specifically about giving you a score to then use that score to decide whether or not you can have access to certain services. That is social credit. That is COVID social credit. Brings us to today. South Korea to use facial recognition to track COVID-19 patients. This is the direction. I keep trying to get people to see this. I know most of you do, but there's a lot of people that don't really put the connection here to the Great Reset technological future and how COVID-19 gets us there. As it says, South Korea will soon roll out a pilot project to use artificial intelligence, facial recognition, and thousands of closed-circuit video cameras that have been put up under other guises all this time to track the movement of people infected with the coronavirus, or people they think are infected, despite concerns about the privacy invasion. So they just disregarded what the people said. Shocking. The nationally funded project in Bucheon, one of the country's most densely populated cities on the outskirts of Seoul, is due to become operational in January. A city official told Reuters, interesting how much seems to correlate with the beginning of the year, right? The loss of the emergency authorization, the new Australian law. I mean, all this stuff seems to kind of be turning on a corner right now. Now it says the system uses artificial intelligence algorithms and facial recognition technology to analyze footage gathered by more than 10,820 security cameras and track an infected person's movements, anyone they had close contact with, and whether they were wearing a mask. All of this will be used to decide what you can and can't do. This is the future that we're trying to warn people about. South Korea already has an aggressive high-tech contact tracing system that harvests credit card scores. Records. Why would that be? Cell phone location data and CCTV footage, among other personal information. So why exactly do they need this system? All right. See, this was sold to you as a solution. They gathered up all the things they needed, and now they're taking the next step under the guise that wasn't enough, though. Isn't that how it always goes? High-tech contact tracing, and all they did was, well, we can't do it. It's not, we don't have enough resources. That was probably the plan. I told you that from the beginning. There's no way they could contact trace all these people, just like they could never possibly follow up on all these VAERS reports. They knew that. So I think the argument was they would fend up here and be able to go, well, look, we are old, broken system and human beings are just too sloppy. We need artificial intelligence and technology. That'll fix it. Sort of like the argument for everything else they're doing right now. Probably part of the plan. Either way, the old clunky human contact tracing system just doesn't get it done. So as we've been harvesting your credit card records, which there's no logical reason why that would make sense other than the social credit score that's going to be used that way, and location data and everything else, CCTV footage, we've got it all set up and ready. So now we're going to roll it into the next stage, artificial intelligence. It still relies, however, on the contact tracing part of it still relies on a number of epidemiological investigators who often have to work 24-hour shifts frantically tracing and contact. None of that's even necessary, by the way, especially since most of these people aren't really at risk. But bottom line, it would make contact tracing faster. I'm sure that's been ready to be pulled out this whole time. So they're tracking you using facial recognition, just like the Shin Bet FBI Israeli government just tried to roll out and got pushed back. It's happening all over the world. And just to finish here, don't forget that back in 2020, foreign policy, so right in the middle of when this is supposed to be the biggest pandemic in a century, they kind of just float out the solution. What was the solution? Well, apparently only surveillance can save us from coronavirus. Big data offers tools to stop the pandemic right now if we change our definition of privacy. Right, because, you know, it's 2030, you own nothing, you have no privacy, you've never been happier, right? Don't forget that. This is where they're driving you. Now, of course, somebody online posted just a screenshot of this picture and didn't tell people that it was from 2020, and so it's being shared as if it just happened and it's relevant. You know, this is why we need to be better than the mainstream media. If you're going to share something on Twitter, share the link with it. Share the picture and then share the link under it, right? Let people be able to do their due diligence, guys. That's what we all need to do. If not, it's only about you being seen as the focal point of information as opposed to the actual information. Now, finally, just to see where this whole surveillance aspect is going and what they're going to be doing with this technocratic future. I already have heard a lot of reports on this. I'm going to probably do a deeper follow-up on this in the future, but this is something that's happening right now. And this is what we're already seeing in regard to people like me. Shutting down your financial revenue from different apps and different things like that. Well, here's Patrick Collins telling you his bank is telling him. He needs to actually provide proof of what he needs to take his money out before he can take his money out. Excuse me? My money, and I need to prove to you my intentions with this money? Here's another one. This happened to one of his clients recently. He went to the bank to withdraw the down payment for his closing, and the bank wouldn't give him the money until he proved to them that he was buying a house. This is something that Biden has rolled out aggressively, tracking your spending and anything over $600 or whatever they did. That is perfectly focused on the average person and their general spending. This is not about anything other than tracking you and what you're doing. You are not allowed to spend your money unless the government okays that spending. This is where it's going. And if we do not do something, this is going to be your future. I've been saying this whole time. This is going to be your future. Unless we stand up and put our foot down. Now is the time to march to the streets, make your flyers, do your shows, speak out. Do everything you can. And I've never advocated violence. I still maintain that's the last thing we should do because it's exactly what they're expecting and what they want from us. That never is to imply that there's not an appropriate time for violence, especially when you're being attacked, when you're being threatened. From even a libertarian standpoint, that's obvious. But the end of the day is if we drive violence forward as our go-to action, or really just as our action to try to change things, it will be used as the impetus to shut it all down. They've made that so very clear. We're at a point now where Australia's already made it illegal. You can shut down your protest based on the idea that they think you're being unsafe. We need to find the other way forward. If we collectively stop, they stop. The problem is that we don't realize yet that we are the majority. You don't realize yet that you are the majority. The numbers prove it. The information proves it. But if you keep listening to the shouts and arguments of the Twitter sphere and the mainstream media about what they frame as the conversations, or what you think you're seeing and feeling when you're walking outside, when all that you're seeing is people that are keeping quiet because they're afraid because they see what's going on in the world, and then the screaming vocal ones that get looked at as the majority because they think they are. And that makes you feel like that's the majority. It's just not. Everything backs that up. You are the majority. You are not alone, and you have people on your side. Stand up with that. Rise up with that. We're changing the world, guys, and I swear it's happening in real time, and you need to feel that. Thank you for being here. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.